It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a great panel. We have Ian Thompson from The Register, Jason Snell from Six Colors, Larry Magid from CBS Radio. We're going to talk about the Snoopers Charter. Ian's got, of course, a unique take on that, just passed in the UK. Wither Work, is it the end of work? We've got a great conversation coming up on that. And, of course, Black Friday was an amazing week for online sales. All of that coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 590, recorded Sunday, November 27th, 2016. The Lady in the Canister. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Automatic, the small adapter that turns your clunker into a smarter connected car. For more information on Automatic's brand new Automatic Pro adapter, visit automatic.com/twit and enter the limited time offer code TWIT20 for $20 off the new device. And by GoToMeeting. Why just phone conference when you can go high tech? Better meetings start with GoToMeeting. HD video means you'll never miss a thing. Screen sharing keeps everyone on task. Don't phone it in. GoToMeeting. Start your free trial at GoToMeeting.com. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere using your smartphone or tablet. For your 14-day free trial, visit texture.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the wakes tech news. I don't know what happened there, but maybe I'm influenced by Ian Thompson, who's here from jolly old. He's at theregister.co.uk and has been living in the U.S. for 7 years now, but refuses to abandon the Britishisms, which I'm glad.
Oh, absolutely not. There's no way I'm actually going to abandon my heritage, and I will say wanker until the day I die. So
I think this is the earliest we've ever had a show title, actually. Jason Snell is also here from the amazing sixcolors.com, former editorial director at IDG.
Hello, mate.
I can't do it.
He also does a wonderful podcast called The Incomparable, which is a theatrical podcast, and many other shows as well.
And many others. Thank you. Good to be here.
It's nice to have you. I always love having you with us in studio. Aww. And I feel bad because Larry Magid, who is also a great friend from CBS Radio and ConnectSafely.org, is not in studio, and you're going to be at a slight disadvantage.
Oh, well. I'm used to that.
Yeah. But just, you know, jam your way in because we got three loudmouths here.
You know, it's the year of the underdog, so why not?
Is that what we're going to call this? It is. You know, I've been reading on Facebook, everybody's so glum because so many people have passed away this year. But I think that's normal. Of course, the latest Ron Glass Shepherd book. That's how I always think of him.
Yeah.
But, of course, on Barney Miller, a wonderful actor.
Yeah.
A young 71.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so great as Shepherd Book on Firefly. And
I know.
Barney Miller, and he will be missed. But he joins, I mean, the year began, sadly, with Prince.
David Bowie.
I mean,
I know. 2006, enough of it. 2016, enough of it already.
And our own colleagues, David Bunnell and Bill McCrone from PC Mag.
A number of our colleagues from IDG and Ziff Davis.
It's funny because I remember, Leo, when you and I were among the very young Turks covering tech.
That's sad.
And remember that back when we were in our 30s?
I knew you then. Ah, the Young Turks.
Yep.
It doesn't seem so long ago.
Nope.
And that's what's weird about life.
It creeps up on you.
It goes by both very fast and very slow.
I was talking about this with a younger relative and said, look, basically, you feel the same. You still feel 21 inside. It's just that you can't quite do what 21 used to do. Yeah. So it's just.
But I once asked, it's like, I almost asked a psychiatrist friend of mine if she had any tricks on how to slow down the aging process and, you know, psychologically slow down that time lapse between years. And she said, yeah, it's very easy. Have a really boring life.
See, I'm trying to figure that out. Is it good to be have less going on and that seems boring, or have more going on and then you have a richer details of – I've been doing the opposite, which is try to get more stuff into, you know, more experiences into my life.
Right, but that does make it go faster. When you're having a good time, time goes by quicker in your mind.
It's as Albert Einstein once said, relativity – what did he say? He said something about a minute with a girl seems like no time – an hour with a girl seems like no time at all. A minute on a hot stove seems like forever.
Right.
I don't know if he actually said that, but it's as Abraham Lincoln once said, don't believe everything you hear on the internet. where should we start? We should start, since we have you here, Ian, with something that broke last week. The Snoopers Charter passed in both houses of Parliament. And once the sovereign – I've learned that term from the Crown – the sovereign approves it.
Yep,
which I presume is pro forma, right?
It's basically the Queen can refuse to sign legislation, but it's never been done. And if it did, it would precipitate a constitutional crisis. And the one thing the Queen is very good is keeping the firm, as she calls it, the royalty, on a smooth course of sailing. It's probably what her idiot son is going to disrupt when he gets into power, but we shall see.
You mean Charlie?
Yes.
I don't know. I think they're going to skip right past Charlie and go straight to William, aren't
they? I wish they would, to be honest, because William seems to have a decent head on his shoulders. Charles still has this rule, this concept that he should in some way rule. And they're like, no, you just won the uterine lottery, for goodness sake. Sit there, look pretty, and open a supermarket.
It's true of every one of them.
I know, but the Queen's actually put some work into it. Yes, Charles basically has just been sitting there waiting for his mum to die. And it's kind of, I think it's done something to his head, because he's got this idea that he should be allowed to rule. And there's a famous conversation during his marriage to Diana, which has never been officially confirmed or denied, but apparently he was complaining to his mentor why he was expected to be faithful to Diana. It's like, my ancestors had mistresses, why can't I? And it's just
Lord.
Because, you know, things are different
now. It's not the 17th century.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
They didn't have television back then, let alone the internet.
Yeah, right. The Investigatory Powers Act of 2016, Theresa May, who's the current prime minister, had proposed this some years ago. Now that she's prime minister.
She was home secretary,
she's been able to get it through. Some of the obvious stuff, some have compared it to our Patriot Act, but it goes considerably farther.
Oh, yes. I mean, it makes the Patriot Act look like a work of beginners. I can understand that this has been sold as a child safety and protect us from Al-Qaeda bill. What it does is give a huge number of people access to the internet histories of everyday users. It also induces cutting off anonymity from some users. But the list of people who can actually look up your internet history is now, I mean, the Food Standards Agency, why quite they need to see the Inland Revenue, which is our version of the IRS. You know, all of these organizations, once you get to a senior enough level, get access to pretty much your entire online life. And as a journalist who worked in the UK for 20 years, I know exactly how that works, because the police have their police records database. And we had numbers that you could call, you know, pass a copper of 25 quid and he would look someone up for you on the database and give you their results. And exactly the same thing is going to happen here. It's going to lead to massive corruption, massive legal problems, and it won't necessarily make us any safer at all. So,
and, you know, it's interesting you bring up the issue of using child protection as an excuse. As you can see behind me, one of the things I do in life is I run ConnectSafely.org, which is an internet safety organization primarily to protect children. And we started this organization for the express purpose of making the point that you can have democracy, you can have internet freedom, you don't have to have censorship, yet you can teach kids to behave in ways that are going to keep them safer than they might otherwise be. And this excuse that every time you want to deny civil liberties is to protect children against, whether it's pornography or fighting pedophiles or whatever it is, it's bogus, because the reality is that these are taking away people's rights. They're not protecting anybody. And in fact, the biggest danger for children is that they would grow up in an undemocratic country. And so,
this is Jeff Jarvis talks about this. He uses the phrase techno panic. And it's always consider the women and children.
Yes.
And it's frequently child pornography that's used because no one in their right mind would be pro-child pornography. Mm-hmm. So it's a very effective rhetorical trick to say, well, this is to protect us against child pornography because it really eliminates opposition. But I think you're exactly right, Larry, that there are completely legitimate reasons to oppose this that have nothing to do with supporting child pornography.
It's what we call the four horsemen of the infopocalypse, which get rolled out. It's pedophiles, organized crime, terrorists, and drug runners.
Yeah.
And these are the four main excuses. And we saw this again with the that letter that the FBI put out about the Rule 41 rule change. Hit all four straight on the button. Yeah. You know, it's just like, oh, you're defending pedophiles if you actually stand up for internet rights.
And you're like, so it's really important for us to say this and say this very clearly, that these two are not connected.
No, I mean, as Larry points out, it's perfectly possible to protect children without giving up basic rights. It's just it's a lot easier if you frame the discussion in those sort of ways.
So one of the things
both the UK and the US law enforcement have plenty of tools to use to obtain evidence if they need them. They have to work a little harder than you do in a totalitarian state. But we've had many convictions of people who have broken the law online, including people who have tried to hide behind their routers.
Right.
And so there's plenty of precedent for catching bad guys.
On the other hand, you know, the FBI, somebody estimated, is running more than half of all the child pornography sites in the United States as a honeypot for pedophiles. And I have to question whether that is a good use of FBI manpower and resources.
Well, the Playpen case was very interesting because, they are running child abuse image servers on the dark web and pushing out malware to people who visit to try and find out who they are. And so far, they've got about 200 convictions on a site which gets 100,000 visits every month. So their malware's not particularly good at the best of times, and they're enabling child abuse. So I'm kind of torn on this one. I don't really see how that falls in their remit.
And it's also borderline entrapment. I mean, technically it's not entrapment, but for all practical purposes, when the government is encouraging you to commit a crime, that is very close to entrapment, which is
it's like putting a wallet illegal on the street with money sticking out of it and then arresting you for picking it up.
Right, exactly.
You know, I think the government should not be in the business of running child porn sites. I think it's safe to say that's a bad idea.
Okay, I agree with you.
and for it to be
all
running,
those in favor of government running
not
child porn
running,
sites.
And for them to be running nearly half of all the child porn night sites out there is absurd. Anyway, that's the U.S. Let's get back to the U.K., the Investigatory Powers Act. There are two kind of areas. One is kind of broad bulk surveillance, which is something in the United States we've been debating ever since the Snowden revelations. And I think it's widely agreed, even among lawmakers, that the NSA and the CIA and the FBI shouldn't have this kind of bulk collection capabilities. So at least we kind of have that agreement. Then the other part of it, which is still being debated in the U.S., is this issue of whether we should have access to encryption, whether we should be allowed. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like, from what I've read, and I'm looking at and I don't see this feature in the list on Wikipedia, but that it also mandates breakable encryption. Is that the case?
This is something the Conservative government has been pushing for quite some time. It's the same as you've got in the UK and the US with this argument about backdooring encryptions.
Yeah.
And it's a very politically easy argument to make, which is, you know, some bad people will use this to communicate in ways that the police can't discover. The corollary of that is what they're going to do is, in fact, weaken encryption by putting a backdoor in, telling everyone they're going to put a backdoor in. And you can imagine that the Chinese government, the Russian government, various governments around the world are just working all out to find this backdoor. Because once you put it in there, you can't guarantee only you will be able to use it.
Right.
Once it's there, anybody can find it, anybody can use it. We saw this with the Juniper Networks backdoor. We're going to see it again. And this time, all our internet traffic is up for grabs. So that makes it a tremendously attractive target for any state-sponsored or criminal-sponsored group which wants to break to find this backdoor and then use it for their own purposes.
Edward Snowden said this bill goes farther than most autocracies are willing to go. Anne Jellema, who is head of the World Wide Web Foundation, asks, does the UK really want the dubious honor of introducing powers deemed too intrusive by all other major democracies? joining the likes of China and Russia and collecting everyone's browsing habits. And yet I get the feeling, because this conversation is happening all over the world, and the UK, which is, let's face it, where the Magna Carta was signed, has adopted it, that this is probably the beginning of the first domino of many to fall, where I think, is it fear of terrorism that's driving this? Or is it just government abuse of power?
This is something the government has wanted for a very long time. It's kind of like the national identity cards debate that we had in the UK. This is something which the civil service and parts of the government desperately want. Nobody else particularly does, but it is being sold as, we will keep you safe from terrorists, blah, blah, blah. Despite the fact that, you know, the number of people killed by terrorists is tiny in comparison. This is basically a power grab.
And it is what, by the way, terrorists, the point of terrorism is to do this, right? This is exactly why one becomes a terrorist, to terrorize.
Yep,
right. And to get the terrorized to act in this way, undermining their fundamental freedoms. This is exactly what a terrorist wants.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's for us to change our way of life.
Mm-hmm. Because, in response to them.
Because we're afraid of them.
Yeah. And it's also a green light for oppressive governments around the world to say, well, the Brits have done it. Why, you know, shut up and stop complaining about our internet laws. Yeah. It's a disaster, and I mean, it's the Conservative government in the UK is just leading the country more and more into becoming a backwater, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I think this could be a precursor to what we see in the United States. I mean, conversations are already taking place in the United States. Yeah. The president-elect is on record as being opposed to Apple's refusal, as is, in all fairness, the current president. On record as, you know, being opposed to Apple's once a refusal to decrypt their iPhone, go out of their way. I think we're going to see increasing pressure on this.
Our current president, President Obama, has been absolutely aggressive in increasing governmental surveillance and power and asserting it. And he even recently said that he doesn't believe Snowden should be pardoned.
That's right.
I mean, it's very clear that this is something that's begun. Been going on probably since 9/11 and has just been accelerating. But I think that there's not much more to say about this, except that if you're watching this show and you care about encryption, you care about your own privacy, and I know our audience cares a lot about privacy.
Yep.
That the thing to do, well, there's several things to do. One is to adopt encryption technologies, even though it's been said by many people that's a red flag. That it's time to learn how to use GPG, to learn how to protect your data, whether you're up to no good or not. In fact, especially if you're not up to no good.
Yeah.
And then to contact your member of Congress and just show them that you're interested. Unfortunately, historically, geeks are kind of apolitical and don't want to get involved. And I think this is a time for us all to stand up and be counted if you want to preserve your privacy and your protections.
Yeah. And use a VPN and use a text messaging service with end-to-end encryption like Signal.
Everybody agrees. Right. Not Telegram, by the way. Signal. Only reason I say not Telegram is because Telegram's encryption is they apparently rolled their own and it's suspect. Furthermore, it's created by a Russian who's, in all fairness, had to leave Russia because they robbed him of all his profits. He was the Mark Zuckerberg of Russia, left because Putin's government basically forced him to turn his company over to the Russian government. However, in their most recent, they just posted a blog post about the updates to Telegram and to a new service they're offering called Telegraph, in which there are a number of dog whistles, which kind of surprised me, including they're talking about the new sticker capabilities, and the sticker they chose to show is Pepe, the alt-right mascot.
Oh, which the guy who wrote Pepe, though, is now trying to reclaim it from the alt-right.
He says, remember all those times when you had a sad Pepe among your recently sent stickers? If you'd like to reunite Pepe with the rest of his family, you now can do that. There are a couple of dog whistles in here that make me wonder what's going on. Anyway, don't use Telegraph. Strange politics don't affect you.
Get on Signal. Keep up to date with what Moxie Mol and Spike
Moxie
is doing.
I think we can trust Moxie.
Yeah, you can trust Moxie absolutely.
Yeah, he's a fighter for privacy and freedom.
Did you see the Saudis contacted him? This was a couple of years ago. Yeah. It was hilarious. Moxie is this dreadlocked anarchist sailor, complete computer whiz when it comes to encryption. He was contacted by a representative of the main Saudi national telco to build a system for monitoring dissidents and spying on them. And so he just, like, he played them along and then just published the entire email message because it was just, what were they thinking? I mean, it's Moxie, for goodness sake. Just look at him.
Yeah. You know? He's not going to go to work for you. I'm sorry. Yeah.
He's got some standards.
Lots to talk about. I want to ask, I'm getting the new, tomorrow, I'm getting the new Microsoft Windows Surface Studio.
Oh, the big one.
With the iMac clone, 28-inch. Yeah. It lies almost flat. I'm going to try using it on this show. I think it'd be kind of cool to have, I'll look like Shepard Smith on Fox News and my giant tablet in front of me. So I think we should talk a little bit about Wither Apple. We've spent a lot of time talking about that. And I'm looking forward to this week giving you my first look. Monday we'll do an unboxing, tomorrow at around noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern.
I had a play with it at the launch, and I have to say it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't usually expect from Microsoft.
And why the hell isn't Apple doing more for its creators?
Apple has lost its course.
Well, we're going to get there.
We're going to get to that. Yes, it's. But I mean, look, the dial is fantastic. The actual build of it.
I brought in, actually, John found it in our basement. This is the power bank that Griffin sold for Apple Macintoshes years ago. We bought a bunch of them for our teleprompter operators, and so the dial is not new.
Mm.
However, I can't put this on the screen of my Surface and do special things. So that's new. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. Let's talk about that and a lot more. Great panel here from sixcolors.com. Jason Snell from theregister.co.uk. Ian Thompson. And from CBS Radio and ConnectSafely.org, the great Larry Magid. Our show today brought to you by... I got one right here. Where did I put my automatic? I connected it
to my... You got a gun?
I put it to my... Yeah, my automatic. My personal OBD port. This is the awesomest thing. The way to turn your clunker into a smart, connected car, the automatic. Every car built since 1996 has something called the onboard diagnostics port. Or OBD2 port. This, you may have seen it under your steering wheel and thought, well, that's probably for the shop, right? That's for the dealer. When they fix my car, they'll plug their computer in. That's true, but you can plug your computer in. This is a Bluetooth device. It goes right in the OBD2 ports, powered by the car. Don't worry, it's not going to drain your battery. It goes to sleep when you're not going. But you pair this to your phone, your iPhone or your Android device, and the things you can do with this are awesome. Of course, there's the obvious. When a check engine light comes on, for instance, your phone will tell you what's wrong, and it even tells you where the nearest repair shop is. It also connects with if this, then that. So, for instance, I can, with my Amazon Echo, I can say how much gas is left in the tank. It'll tell me. I can find out more. You can link it to your Nest thermostat so you can have the heat turn on your way home. This is the new Automatic Pro, which is even cooler. It doesn't even need a smartphone. It has unlimited 3G service built in, no subscription fee, and it works wherever you are. So it will get help in a crash. Automatic Pro will detect severe accidents. Trained responders will call for help even if you cannot. If you have teenagers, this is a must. You can geofence. You can get alerts when your kids go outside of the area. For instance, we're not going to let Michael drive on the highway till he's a little bit older.
I should hope
this will help us, right? I love the idea that even if you don't have your phone, it knows where you are. If it knows where you've parked. I use it all the time because I always forget where I parked. And the other day, Lisa said, "Do you remember where we parked?" I said, "No." She said, "Oh, it's too bad we don't have anything that could tell you where you parked." And I went, "Oh, as a matter of fact, we do." Normally $129.95, we have an offer code. This would be a great gift for the holidays. TWIT20 will save you $20. TWIT20. Go to automatic.com/TWIT for more information. It is awesome if you've got teenagers. This should be a stocking stuffer for all teenagers.
Does it show you your miles per gallon as well?
Yep. And
see,
it does,
I use that, yeah.
Really, because, you know, I think a lot of times we go, well, it's worth driving to Costco 12 miles away to save $5 on that bag of chips. But obviously, if your gas cost is $4, it's not. And this tells you every trip. I have it set up so it goes to Evernote. It does an Evernote entry every time I take a trip that tells me, it has a map of where I went, exactly how many miles. It also grades your driving on hard braking. You can turn that off. Hard braking or acceleration. Ian says, I don't want to know. And but all of that goes into my Evernote notebook, or if the kids are driving, same thing. So I have information about it, what the gas cost was for every single trip. That's fantastic. Wow. Automatic.com/twit. It's the quantified car. It's the new thing, kids.
That would be great for Uber drivers to actually know what they're really earning on a trip.
A lot of fleets do this. Yeah. I mean, UPS does this. And you're right. It'd be good. I don't know if Uber does that kind of monitoring, but it should, and that would be really great.
They probably don't want the drivers to know.
Did you read about the new Uber? I guess this is in New York mostly. Is it called?
Right, the local one.
Yeah, is it Juno? Is it, what is the name?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, because
I should try that tomorrow. Yeah.
Are you? Yeah, you're going to New York. Yeah. So there was a good New Yorker article about them, and Baratunde told me about him. He says, I don't use Uber anymore because it's exploitative. I want to use Juno. Now, Juno is started by the guys who started, they sold Viber. They started Viber, remember that?
Yeah.
For $900 million. So the founder, Tom and Marco, said he thought, well, I could sit around and just, you know, enjoy life, or I could take some of that money and start another company. He looked around and he said, you know, we could do what Uber's doing better. Now, they're kind of cannibalizing Uber because they're going after the best Uber drivers. Mm-hmm. If your Uber score, your rating on Uber is over, this is something out of a Black Mirror episode. If your Uber score is over 4.7 out of 5 stars, you can apply to drive for Juno. In other words, if you're one of the best, they'll steal you away. Although many drivers do both.
Yeah.
And you get a higher percentage, right?
Yeah. Uber takes 5 to 25% commission. Juno takes 10%. And what's happening with a lot of Uber drivers are getting squeezed. It started out great, and then Uber takes more and more and more. I took an Uber the other day. We were in Florida, and I tried to give the guy a tip. He says, no, the company doesn't let me take tips. And I said, oh, my friend.
Yeah.
You are so wrong.
They don't let you tip within the app like Lyft does.
They pretend that you're getting tipped. I always assumed Uber was tipping the driver. And they told drivers you may not ask for a tip until the driver sued and won.
Yeah.
And now Uber drivers can ask for tips. I told them, not only are you allowed to take tips, you can now ask for tips. And don't believe what the Uber guy's telling you.
No. I mean, Uber has a long record of treating its drivers terribly badly.
It's exploitive.
They're on the record as saying that basically they're just hanging around until the automated car comes out, and they're just going to dump all these drivers anyway. Yeah. So, you know, it's not a company I choose.
So Lyft allows you to tip within the app, and what I like about that is I'll tip after I get out of the car. When I'm at the end of a ride, what I like about Uber and Lyft is I can just get out of the car and leave. I don't have to fiddle with my wallet.
Yep.
But I kind of feel bad because I do like to tip if I get good service. But Lyft lets you do that at any point after the ride's over.
I felt guilty because I have never tipped Uber drivers, assuming that I didn't have to.
I know, and I don't carry cash. One of the reasons that I really like Uber is that I don't need to worry about having cash for a tip.
Ever since that court case, I have now automatically tip. I carry cash, and then maybe you should try it. So, Larry, when you're in the Big Apple, try Juno.
So, as a matter of fact, tomorrow morning I've got a 6 a.m. flight, and I don't trust Uber or Lyft to actually have a driver in my neighborhood available to pick me up at 4:30. So Lyft now lets you schedule. I actually have a Lyft reserved.
Right.
I think I'm paying a little extra for that, but it's a relief to know that a driver will be there at 4:30 in the morning. And I don't have to worry about
it. It is nerve-wracking, isn't it, that you could just assume, well, I'm going to get up and I'm going to press a button and a guy will come within 5 minutes at 4:30 in the morning. Maybe, maybe not. And you don't want to miss that flight.
Palo Alto, nobody in their right mind will be driving up Palo Alto.
That's the thing. Even with Juno and Lyft, I worry about in a few years, it's clear that all of these companies want to do autonomous vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
these jobs are not going to exist in 5 years.
Then you'll pay extra for the human touch, right? There'll be like an extra fancy, you know, our driver knows the way to go, but it will push the bottom 90%, 80% of the drivers out of the market.
Exactly. Right.
Eventually.
Yeah, and considering that driving is one of the most, I think about 3.5-4 million Americans are now
1.1% of the workforce is
professional drivers.
And
they're going to be out of the
truck drivers.
Yeah,
it's a huge number that's going to have to...
Truck drivers are going to be usually impacted by it because that's one of the areas that might actually get covered sooner because it's so much more efficient to not have people, you know, human beings who have to do things like sleep and eat.
Yeah.
Well, we saw it just a few weeks ago. Otto, O-T-T-O, which is an Uber company, delivering, 7,500 cases of beer
Well, it was Budweiser, so calling it beer is a bit strong.
It's Coors.
Right. Oh, it's Coors. Well, that makes it perfectly all right.
You want to have you want the beer in the robot truck to be something you can lose and not really worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's important.
So I don't. I wasn't going to get into this today because this is kind of a deep and difficult to understand, a parse topic. But it is very clear that income inequality is a growing problem. That's clear, right? Mm-hmm.
And the hollowing out of industries, right?
Jobs are going away. And I, you know, even if you are able to get Carrier air conditioner to stay in the United States, it seems highly unlikely that industrial jobs that have been lost will come back at any point.
Right.
You can talk about, and some do, retraining, teaching people to have skills that are more in need. But it's very clear with the advance of machine learning, artificial intelligence, that we're rapidly getting to a situation where even jobs like mine that one would assume require human skills won't be available in the years to come. So that leaves a very interesting question. There was an article this week in The Atlantic, A World Without Work. This is Derek Thompson writing. And this is an issue that a lot of people are starting to think about. Actually, I apologize. This is a year old.
Yeah, I've read that. That's a really great piece, though. This is one of those issues that, you know, you have this... Our economy in some ways has never been more efficient, but it's employing fewer people, and that's the challenge. Is if you lose another 1% of the workforce, are they going to outlaw robot trucks? Probably not.
So I think Donald Trump is going to get his campaign eventually. Maybe not during his administration. He will fulfill his campaign promise of bringing jobs back to the United States. But the problem – I'm sorry, bringing industry back to the United States, not jobs. So, yes, Apple is going to start – eventually they'll start making devices in the U.S.
But it'll be with robots. Foxconn in China has replaced 30,000 people with robots.
So, right. And especially if energy continues to be cheap, why not put a plant in the middle of the United States closer to the consumer if you don't have to employ anybody?
Well, there's actually interesting economic reasons for China – for Apple to manufacture in China. It's closer to the sources and the suppliers of the pieces.
Yeah, it's the supply chain.
It's much easier and cheaper to assemble in China. It's not about labor. The cost of labor that would change about $5 between making it here and making it in China. It's not about the labor cost. It's about the access to suppliers
and being able to adjust what you get from the supply chain
just in time
moment by moment so that you can minimize your inventory and all those things that Tim Cook, for example, made his
name at. That's what he does.
Yeah, he was COO logistics. And that was,
So I think that we will probably be able to reverse some of this. But the long-term trend is clear. These jobs are not going to even exist in China. I mean, it's not that these jobs are fleeing to China. They are going to disappear thanks to automation, machine learning, artificial intelligence. And that's what this article says. But the thing that this article wants you to think about is, do we even need to work? And this is why psychologically it's very difficult. Historically, we associate who we are with what we do. Mm-hmm. Without my work, I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
And so psychologically, Mark Andreessen has addressed this, the Netscape billionaire. He says, you don't have to worry about income inequality. You don't have to worry about job loss because there will be such a surplus, thanks to automation and machine learning, that there will be enough to go around and you actually won't need to work. That we can all have a basic,
welfare.
The idea, and Mark is, now there are problems with basic income.
Huge problems, yes.
Chief of which it replaces in other entitlements like medical insurance that won't be covered in the long run by basic income. But let's assume we could fix that discontinuity. If there is a surplus, maybe in the future we won't need to have jobs, but we'll have to psychologically adjust who we as are.
Right. And the idea of basic income, by the way, if you've seen the sci-fi series The Expanse, they mention that from time to time. It's part of the universe there is that Earth is on a basic income at that point.
Right.
The idea is you don't have to work just to survive. But if you want anything more, if you want to buy clothes that don't come out of a machine and food that doesn't come in cubes, then you choose to work.
Right.
And the idea there is that we could all end up being more productive if we can choose what we want to work on. And it could lead humanity to interesting places instead of sort of fighting to do just enough to survive, it is also a bit of a utopian vision, and there's a question about whether it could actually work.
There's also the service economy, and by service, I don't mean just working at McDonald's. So we had a flood in our house in July, and we've had workers here constantly for the last several months, you know, putting walls in and painting and doing things that cannot be done currently by machines. And
admittedly,
so we're spending a lot of money.
Part of the problem is that these jobs may, in fact, exist, but pay so little and be so grinding and grueling that they, in fact, don't raise you above the poverty line. In fact, the minimum wage in the United States does not raise you above the poverty line.
Right. But doing carpentry work in Palo Alto, at least at the guys that we hire, is $75 an hour,
right.
Which if you didn't live in Palo Alto is a pretty good wage. I mean, the problem is to live in this area is so high. But I mean, what I'm saying is that there are still jobs out there. In fact, I think this whole home automation thing that we're in right now, the IoT thing, requires skilled people to know what to buy, to know how to install it, to know how to configure it. And I do think that there are service jobs that are going to be emerging over the next few years. They may not last forever, but there will be some opportunities for people. And many of these jobs don't require a college education.
Here's from this Atlantic article of last year. The most common occupations in the U.S. are retail salesperson, cashier, food and beverage server, and office clerk. These four jobs are about 10% of the labor force, 15.5 million people. Each, according to an Oxford study, is highly susceptible to automation.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, admittedly, there will be people working.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that podcast show hosts will not be eliminated by automation. However, even if you have 10% of the labor force not working, you have to address this issue. And I would submit that this is a clear future at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to think about what does that mean.
Let me recommend a video for people to watch that's really great on this by CGP Gray. It's on YouTube.
Yes,
it's called "Humans Need Not Apply."
Yeah,
it might be his biggest traffic video. It's got almost 8 million views.
Yeah,
on it.
I watched it. And it's kind of scary.
It's scary, but the logic is there. We are entering a time when. We think that, you know, the 21st century right now is different than when we grew up. But the reality is we're entering a time where lots of rules that we don't even know are rules because they just seem like they're fundamental will just not apply anymore.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to require basically a fundamental restructuring of capitalism. And that makes me very nervous because that doesn't usually happen without blood on the streets.
Yeah.
I was speaking to a guy on the OpenAI project, you know, Musk's artificial intelligence program.
He's doing an open one because he's afraid that Google and Facebook and others will own this.
Exactly.
He doesn't want proprietary artificial intelligence.
But their developers are actually saying this is coming along much, much faster than people are forecasting. Because AI has been this year's thing. You know, everyone wants to build themselves as an AI company. But the point at which, you know, lawyers' jobs, accountants' jobs,
right.
You know, any kind of job you can think of almost can be automated using code which is under development at the moment. So this is coming up on us very fast, and I don't see anybody having a way to do this and manage this change without serious societal upheaval. And there seems to be no plan in action, and that is
in fact, even without AI, if you think of things like TurboTax, how many accounting jobs have been taken away as a result of TurboTax? I mean, there must be thousands.
Not accounting jobs, but there used to be a category called tax preparer,
right,
H&R Block. Mm-hmm. And even H&R Block makes its own software now that makes an H&R Block human unnecessary.
Yeah.
So, you don't need a tax preparer.
And that's
we use QuickBooks at our nonprofit. And not only is it much cheaper than a bookkeeper, it's much easier than a bookkeeper. We actually save time using QuickBooks over the time we used to have to interact with our bookkeeper. And so it's not like it wasn't even a financial decision. It was an efficiency decision. And those things are happening more and more and more to the point where a lot of jobs have just gone away.
Let me bring this back around to Uber because of something that Larry said there. There is a possibility that governments will artificially block efficiency.
Yeah.
And tax preparation is a great example where one of the reasons in many other countries, because the U.S. government knows exactly, you know, you get that bill and they already know from your pay stubs exactly how much tax you owe. Well, in other countries, they just say, okay, this is what we think you owe. Let us know if it's something different. But in the U.S., you have to file a return. Why is that? Because the tax preparers lobby the government very hard to keep tax preparation necessary.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, it gets better. the tax software people, it's not TurboTax, it's the other one, but one of the automated tax preparers, has lobbied Congress to make the tax laws more opaque and more complicated. Yeah. And to reduce and increase the amount of complexity into the system.
There are, but this shows you can have attempts by governments to artificially retain jobs, even though they aren't necessary.
I don't think in the long term those will succeed. Do you?
Who knows? I mean, this you could argue that this goes back to Eisenhower warning against the military-industrial complex. What if the United States tomorrow decided it wanted to cut its defense budget in half? Could we? Given how many people work in that sector, the unemployment would be outrageous,
right? One could argue that this most recent presidential election was really a referendum over jobs and job loss, and that the promise that President-elect Trump made was, I will save your jobs. It was a very direct response to this issue.
And the problem is that a lot of the jobs he said he was going to save, there's just no way that they can come back. So
one of the reasons coal jobs, mining jobs are disappearing is not because we're buying Chinese coal or even because we're closing down coal-fired power plants, but because the coal companies themselves are closing down and turning to fracking and other more profitable businesses.
Hilltop mining rather than deep
hilltop
mining.
And so
it's also a very small industry relative. Right. I mean, there are far more people working in solar than working coal.
Hard to make those jobs come back. In 2013, according to this Oxford article in The Atlantic, Oxford University researchers forecasted, here's the most scary statistic, that machines might be able to do half of all U.S. jobs in the next two decades. Again, your carpenter, your $75 an hour carpenter, might still have a living, especially if he's good at wood carving.
Right.
But that's still half of all jobs gone. That has to be a massive disruption.
Oh, it's going to be.
And the real question is, what do we tell our kids? What is the future for them? What should my 22 and 24-year-old be thinking about right now?
Get into computer security. That is going to be a growth area.
No, I think that that's one of the things that could easily be replaced by an artificial intelligence.
But this is the thing. I don't know. I think one of the core problems, and gets back to the election too, is we have a lot of highly educated professions that some of them might get hurt, but a lot of them are going to be fine. The problem is that traditionally, people who, for whatever reason, economic reasons, you know, it doesn't really matter, didn't seek an education, didn't want an education, couldn't get an education, still could find an honest living and be middle class in America. And when you look at the direction this is going, that starts to be a real question about a percentage of the population that isn't going to ever get a PhD in biology. They don't want it. They're not inclined to do that. And yet they look at their job prospects and there's nothing. There's maybe even nothing full time. It's all little gigs with no benefits. Right. And that's terrifying.
I mean, it used to be the case. I mean, there's a certain sort of historical aspect to this in that, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, American manufacturing was dominant in the large part because it was the only country that hadn't been ravaged by World War II and actually had some, you know, so you could get a high pay, you know, middle class job with a high school degree. You could go and you could join the factory and that would work out. That's no longer the case. That's never coming back. So, you know, we need to work out some kind of way to get people, you know, give them a way to earn a living that doesn't leave them scrabbling around on the breadline. And yeah, we may well produce a surplus through automation, but I would argue that based on past human history, it's almost never been given away freely to the large populace.
Well, you could say that right now. I mean, Travis Kalanick is not giving the billions of dollars he has to you and me, or even to Uber drivers. In fact, he's giving less and less to Uber drivers and putting more and more in his pocket. So you're absolutely right. I mean, that's very clear that the trickle down is a pipe dream.
You see, but I mean, that only works up to a point. Sooner or later, the numbers of dispossessed rise high enough so that they take over the thing. And
that's why you see movies like Elysium, where the people who had the money move to the satellite and the rest of us have to scrabble around on Earth trying to survive.
But anarchist mobs don't build chip fabs. You know, we need to get this sorted out because otherwise
just like the last segment, this is something we as technologists and everybody listening and watching needs to think about because we understand better than many what's going on and what the potential consequences are.
And it's our industry that is often going to be the driver of this change.
Absolutely.
This is a challenge, and it's a challenge. You said about how geeks don't like to be involved in politics and things like that. It is terrifying to be able to say, the thing I'm about to create, which I think is great and has a great upside, could be completely destructive to our way of life. And that doesn't mean you don't necessarily do it.
You have to still do it.
But you have to, you know, apply some morality and think about the bigger issues. And I do think that that has been a blind spot in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. And to understand the unintended consequences. I mean, I feel actually a little bit guilty because I've been a champion of social media since before social media was a word, right? So going back to the 80s in some ways. And I have to tell you, there are aspects of social media today that scare the hell out of me. I mean, the fake news and the propagandizing, and even although I think it's exaggerated, there is no question that there's a certain amount of radicalization that goes on that contributes to terrorism. And there's a lot that has happened as a result of social media that I actually feel a little guilty about, because as I, along with a lot of other people, were propagandizing and promoting this over the last 30 years, I think we put some thought into the unintended consequences, but not nearly enough thought. And I really think it's very important that you think that through.
I feel a little guilty about pushing all these shiny little what do you call them? Fondle slabs?
Yes.
And we talk a lot about gear and, you know, techno lust and consumerism. But I have to say, I don't think thinking about the consequences or being the engineer who's going to say, well, I'm not going to invent this because of what it might do, is going to make a hill of beans difference, because I think technology has a marches on. I don't.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think
you can't uninvent something.
You can't uninvent something, and you can't keep something from being invented, even though it may have dire sociological consequences. This is going to happen, and even though Google, what if Google said, what if Larry Page said, you know, we're going to stop this in researching artificial intelligence. Clearly, this is going to be a problem. That's not going to happen. No,
but what you want is something like OpenAI, or you want somebody like Google to be engaged with our government in a way where they can say, look, these are issues that we think we need to resolve here, instead of being like, oh, you know, I just build the bomb, I don't drop it.
Yeah.
But actually, and Google, to its credit, Google does do that. I mean, they have people who think about those things. Whether or not those people are driving product or they're just off in some corner in Mountain View or Washington, I'm not sure. But they have people. I'm headed next week to Guadalajara for the Internet Governance Forum. And Google's going to be there along with Facebook and all the other companies. And we're going to be talking about the implications and the unintended consequences and, you know, the policies around all of this technology. So they do think about that. But I'm not sure how much that drives innovation or how much that's just sort of after the fact conversations about the technology that's already out there.
It is a little worrying that the chief technologist who's advising Donald Trump at the moment is Peter Thiel, who, let's face it, doesn't have a great reputation when it comes to, you know, dealing well with others, put it that way.
I'm kind of the opinion that these are ultimately forces of nature.
Yeah.
And human beings will be tossed around like leaves in a wind, no matter what we think or say or do. And so I don't really think it matters whether Peter Thiel is advising Donald Trump or not. I mean, in the short term, it will matter, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, I think the trend is very clear. And maybe I'm pessimistic, but I feel like we're going to have a very big dislocation at some point. I think they're starting to come to a head now. I think we're starting to see this come to a head. And it's really, at this point, a race between whether the ice caps melt and flood all of Silicon Valley or Silicon Valley destroys all work and we have mobs at the gates. I feel bad for my kids, because I don't think the next five decades are going to be anywhere. I think we have lived an amazing last few decades. Truly amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't like how you said last few decades. Like,
well, I
know
think,
what you meant, but it also sounds awfully final.
Well, there's a new book that's a wonderful book called Millennium that talks about this. We have lived in an amazing 100 years. Admittedly, the most bloody 100 years in human history, because we've gotten very good at technological warfare.
Yep.
But at the same time, we've also seen amazing advances in life expectancy and medicine. Technology's been an amazing boon.
That's going to continue, Leo. Your kids are going to live a lot longer than you will. I mean, certainly your grandchildren are going to live to 140.
Yeah, but they may be living on Alpo. I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, I worry about, although, and I think we should really appreciate where we are today, living as we do, all of us, as kings, really, in many ways. We have running water and toilets.
If you take a little broader perspective, I believe fewer people are starving in the world today than at any point in human history.
Is that true?
Standards of living in large portions of the world are dramatically better than they were even 50 years ago.
Yes, and I fear for this progress.
And so, well, I don't know. I think part of it may be that it's very easy in the United States to get a lack of perspective and say things are not improving in the United States and therefore the world is going to hell, when the reality may be that things are improving everywhere else in the world and the United States already had it so good that
we're in a way the forebearers, aren't we, of what was happening
cheap
in the rest
goods.
Of the
world.
Or there's a rebalancing happening.
Well, and then I think that's what Mark Andreessen is saying. Goods will be effectively free, so work will be much less important.
You remember buying a pair of – if you wanted to buy a nice pair of slacks in 1960, I can't remember what the price was. But it was a significant amount of money, probably about $120, $150 in today's dollars to buy a pair of slacks. You can go to Walmart, and maybe that's not the highest quality clothing that you would want to buy. But you can buy something for $15, $20, and they're going to look okay. You can get away with that.
I'll give you another example. Long-distance telephone calls. You remember the days when you had to say, I'm calling long distance. This has to be quick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Effectively, communication anywhere on the globe is free now.
Right.
What the hell? That is a massive change.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I mean, just the shift to electronic communications. The very idea now of... I mean, Christmas is coming up, so my mum's doing her Christmas card list. For me, the very idea of getting a piece of dead tree and writing on it and putting a stamp on it and trusting it to the Global Postal Service, do it electronically. It's there. It's instant. It might not have the soul of a paper Christmas card, but they're going to get thrown away 2 days after Christmas anyway, so, you know, why not do it electronically? Of course, that's not a very popular opinion, it seems, but no, it's certainly doable.
What's funny, I just printed a brochure. I'm headed to a conference, and I printed this brochure for my nonprofit, and it brought me back to – I used to be a printer back in the, you know, decades ago, and it brought me back to this wonderful time of loving to be laying out a piece of paper and printing it and making sure everything was properly registered. Of course, I did it on a color laser printer, and it, you know, it didn't take any skill. But then I realized – I started printing these things, and you know, I ran out about a couple hundred. I realized, you know, wait a minute, nobody's going to actually take this piece of paper. Why am I doing?
What a waste!
Yeah,
we have there's a guy at the gym who does a Christmas CD every year, and he gave me the CD, and I said, "Wow, that's retro." Pretty soon, you're not going to be able to give people CDs. I don't even think I have a CD player anymore. Let me see if I can find one. Mm. He says I burn 500 of these every year. I have a 5 CD burner that I was given 1 year for Christmas. I said, yeah, John, that's good. you're going to have to rethink this strategy soon. Maybe just share a Spotify playlist.
Actually, it's funny. Yeah. There's actually a DVD CD player in my car that I discovered about 5 years after I bought it. I didn't even know I had one. Punching around. Oh, wait, I didn't know that was there. It's kind of hidden behind the screen.
All right, let's take a break. But, I'm not sure it's all bad. I don't know if it's good or bad. But I think it's really important to kind of think. We see every day and we report every day about the disruptions that technology and the information revolution is bringing to our world. And businesses rise and fall on the basis of this. And it might be worth spending a little time thinking about, as we have just done.
Oh, a little bit of preparation can save an enormous amount of hurt down the line.
What the impact will be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this is the climate change of the information generation. This is a really massive change.
And by the way, I don't think Henry Ford was putting a lot of thought about the environmental impact of automobiles and how it would affect people's health and their safety. No. Back when he was building cars.
Actually, he was paying his staff well enough that they could afford to buy the car in the first place.
I'm going to give Ford a little credit because, admittedly, he didn't have the sophisticated thinking that we do nowadays of the holistic effect of the automobile. But he was very well aware of how the automobile would change America for the better by bringing making communications in rural society change, the ability to bring to market farm produce. He knew that this would make a massive change. It was his opinion it would be better.
Did he think about the negative consequences?
I don't think he can be blamed for not understanding the pollution aspects.
No, not at all.
I mean, it was just, you know, who knew that taking all that carbon out of the ground and pumping it into the air would have a deleterious effect? I don't think anybody in 1929 would have that.
No, I mean, there's lots to dislike about Ford and his support for the Nazis in particular. But, I mean, at the same time, you can't blame the – say he should have known about carbon dioxide and global climate.
Well, lead poisoning.
Who knew? I mean, who knew?
My point of bringing it up is on one hand, I give the tech industry some credit because we are having these conversations. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I also blame the tech industry for not having enough of these conversations early on, early enough. But I think that we probably are a little bit ahead of where the industrial revolutionaries were in terms of thinking about this. I would like to think so anyway.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, that was a good conversation I did not expect to have. Thank you. Let's take a break and come back. Maybe we'll talk about the Mac next. Maybe not. I don't know. Who knows?
Anything could happen.
That's the wild card. I'm going to spin the wheel. We'll see what comes up. Our show today brought to you by our friends at GoToMe. Here's a perfect example. Perfect example of how technology changes how you do business. It used to be everybody hated this. I remember even as recently as, 20 years ago, having a meeting was such a disruption. It was the last thing you wanted to do. It took you away from your work. But you do have to have meetings, right? You have to sit down in the same room and talk over things. We have a rule: after 3 emails, make a phone call, because it's not going to get any better with more emails. Sometimes you need to cut the Gordian knot. And if you're a team that's distributed, and this is another thing that's changed, where teams are globally all over the world at different hours and different times, those meetings really are important. GoToMeeting is the high-tech solution to this. It makes meetings fast, efficient. They don't get in the way. They do what meetings do best, which is solve problems. And if you're going to have a meeting, don't make a phone call. Don't do a phone conference. That is so 1990s. Go with a tech leader. Use GoToMeeting. Of course, it starts with a conference bridge. You can have a phone call, a conference call, very affordable. But let's say you say, I'd love to show you the drawings of this plan, or maybe you'd like to see the elevations, or maybe you want to see my PowerPoint presentation and what we can do for you. Then you fire up the screen sharing. Suddenly you're both on the same page. You're looking at the screen. Maybe then you say, I'd like to see your expression while you look at these drawings. Fire up the crystal clear HD video. It's like meeting in person no matter where everybody is, without all the travel costs, without the time consuming getting together in the same room. Whether it's a sales demo, a presentation, collaborative, or ad hoc meeting, GoToMeeting makes every meeting count. Efficient, fast, affordable. And in fact, 9 out of 10 GoToMeeting users agree they close deals more than 20% faster. That's what this is all about. Don't phone it and use GoToMeeting. You could try it free right now at GoToMeeting.com. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click the orange button. It says try it free. You got to try this. You got to use this. It is a lifesaver. It's a perfect example of how we've gone from, remember, it used to be very expensive to have a conference call. I would sit there in a conference call, think about the clock ticking. Now it's effectively flat rate, fee, free. GoToMeeting.com. Give it a try today. Ian Thompson from theregister.co.uk. You've been so great coming here and being a part of our shows so much in the last few months. We really
honestly, it's really it's good fun. You get to chat about technology with people that know about it. What's wrong with that?
And you give us kind of a posh feeling. Which is nice. Also, Jason Snell from sixcolors.com and The Incomparable.
Hello.
And Larry Magid from CBS Radio. Actually, I was thinking about London the other day. Claridge's Hotel. We stayed there when we were in London. Very posh place, right? If the Queen wants to stay in a hotel, I don't know why she would. That's where she would stay.
She's got her own place in London. It's very big, 700 rooms or so.
But if she did, she'd stay at Claridge's. Well, apparently this is what Johnny Ive is up to these days.
Yeah.
I really think Johnny does not make much time in Cupertino anymore. I really feel like he's kind of...
I don't know. John Gruber said this week that some little birdie said that Johnny's still pretty engaged with product stuff.
Well, that's an answer to this question of what the hell is he doing?
Because he and I talked about it on his podcast. And people wrote articles saying, oh, my God, this pundits speculate that Johnny Ive's not doing anything, which is not really much of a story. Here's what he's doing. He's putting trees in a room in London.
This is Claridge's lobby, which I remember very well, and it's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. He has created, with Mark Newsom, his partner, a brilliant designer, very famous designer, installation for Christmas. It's the Claridge's Christmas tree for this year. No lights on these birches. Let me see if I can find some more pictures of it.
Is he doing a pretentious video about it?
This is the most Christmassy Christmas tree I've ever done.
Exactly.
I am sorry. I don't know what little birds.
I don't know what little birds John Gruber is talking to either. No.
But here's my take on this. Said to be connected to product design as ever. Here's my take on this. Johnny was all in on the watch. Johnny said, this is my thing. The watch did not take off. It is not Apple's next big product. It's okay. It sold a few million. It's not like it's a flop.
No.
But it's not changing the world.
No.
And Johnny said, well, that's fine. I'm going to go. I've got some cars to design or something. And
they've backed away from that now.
Yeah. They're not even doing that.
McLaren did say that they've been in early stage conversations, but then... But
the why would Apple buy the most expensive... They make 100 of anything, right? The F1, there was 100. Why would they buy McLaren? That's kooky.
Like the people, maybe?
That's Johnny. No, that's Johnny. I'm telling you, Johnny called him up and said, if we were to buy you, how much would it... That's all. And then Apple, according to rumor, this Apple's never admitted this, but I think good sources say Apple has moved most of the airport staff over to Apple TV.
Yeah, I hadn't heard the... Yeah, I don't know about the details exactly.
Seems
but
unlikely we're going to see a new airport.
Airport wireless. Yeah, if they've got a strategy for some of that stuff, it's not going to be making their own Wi-Fi routers anymore.
No, why should they?
I agree. Why should they?
Why should they? Other people are doing it. This is a Bloomberg.
And when they started, nobody Kerman was doing talking. It.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and his sources are immaculate.
I think Mark is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Apple has basically implied they're not going to make any more displays. Go buy the LG.
They told Nilay Patel, we're out of the display.
Yeah, we're not going to make displays. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear Apple doesn't have a lot of heart in the Mac Pro.
I don't know if that's entirely clear.
Three years, my friend!
So there's some theories here. I mean, mentioning earlier about communities in the Apple community, there is still a very strong Apple community because I've heard all of their frustrations about the Mac Pro. A couple of theories about that, just really quickly. One of them is that maybe Apple's bet on packing the Mac Pro 3 years ago, the trash can model full of GPUs, they realized was not actually what they needed to do. There are some rumors that perhaps they're rethinking, like they basically decided that's not going to work, we need a new design. Also, there is a prevailing theory among Apple Kremlinologists that Apple decided to skip an Intel chip generation because they thought they could get away with it and use their time elsewhere. And then Intel delayed their chip generations and they got out of sync and now they're kind of stuck. And that is, I want to say, I'm not blaming Intel. Intel does what it does. Apple's the one that decided theoretically to get away with skipping a generation and now it has bitten them. But I think that those are the stories there. I think Apple, I mean, the Mac,
you know,
the
what,
Mac
it
Pro shows
been...
that they are investing energy in the Mac.
I'm going to argue with you in that.
But let me
say that actually skipping the Intel generations has not hurt them a whit. I think the Intel chip, the Xeon inside the Mac Pro is fine, especially if you've got an 8-core or a 12-core. You've got plenty of horsepower in there. But by soldering in stuff, the only upgradable part of the Mac Pro is the memory. You can't change that GPU. A 3-year-old GPU, you might as well just throw it out.
It feels to me like that product missed the idea of why people buy high-end products like that. And this is my overriding concern. So we can get into it. I think a lot of the concerns about what Apple is doing now are a little bit hysterical. But I will say this. If Steve Jobs likened computers in the future to trucks and smartphones and tablets to cars, which he did a while ago, that they're specialized, they're going to become over time more specialized devices for work. I'm not sure sometimes when I look at Apple's Mac strategy that I'm seeing any trucks, right? And if there was ever to be a truck, the Mac Pro you would think would be the truck.
Yeah.
And yet it got sort of like they took out the bed, you know, they took out and they replaced it with some more seating. It's like what's up with Apple is, do they, I believe they're committed to the Mac, but are they thinking of the Mac using the same terms that they use for iOS? Because I don't think that's what the Mac is for.
Well,
the same
I think what Apple said is the writing is on the wall. iOS is the future. We will continue to make the Mac for a few more years because there's demand for it, but we're not going to put a lot of resources into it.
I think they're going to make the Mac for a long time, but the Mac is not.
So.
But the Mac is not. It's a legacy product for them. Unlike Microsoft, Apple has a touch-based OS. So the Mac's entire existence is about creating something familiar for Mac users to keep using, not about like transforming it into something new.
And incidentally, you could make the same argument for Microsoft. They recognize we're in a post-PC era. They're moving most of their business to cloud services.
They make
a PC, you know, because there's still a market for it. It ain't much of a market. Go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
Well, no, the innovation, I mean, this is one of many really good Windows machines that came out this year.
Is that a
Yoga? Hewlett-Packard Spectre.
Oh, that's
it's like
Spectre,
the Yoga. It's the same idea. You can make it, although I never do this except for on television.
Right.
I've never used it as a tablet. But the point is that, you know, Apple puts a little strip right here and calls it, what do they call their touch bar. You know, Microsoft gives you an entire screen. I mean, I don't know. I just don't see – I went to the Apple announcement, for the MacBook Pro announcement, and I actually went there, you know, show and tell. here's my MacBook Air, which has been my workhorse computer for years. It hasn't been redesigned in, 7 years or something. I was actually hoping they would show me a machine that I wanted to go out and spend my own money on. And they showed – I mean, and I like the Mac Pro. It's not a bad computer, but I'm not going to spend $1,800 on one. I don't think you get that much value for your money when you consider that there are a ton of great Windows laptops out there for under $1,000 that compete very nicely against their $1,800 Mac Pro in terms of what I care about as a user. And I just I felt almost betrayed. I felt, oh, my God, I'm going to have to leave the fold. My next computer is not going to be a Mac. And I had fully intended to buy a new Mac just like I have almost every year for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I'd say we watched the launch announcement because the Register is barred from Apple events. But
really?
You know, oh, yeah, we're on
well,
their blacklist.
Nice to meet you. I also am barred from Apple.
But, you know, we watched the presentation, and it was just like, seriously under spec, overpriced for what it is. Is the marketing strategy just buy this like the salivating dogs that you are, or right. Is there some kind of...
It almost feels like Apple's laughing at us now.
Yeah, they're kind of taking the piss on.
I'm a huge Mac fan, and I would far rather run Mac OS than Windows 10, given the choice. I really would. But at the price point there, and by the way, now having used this for 10 days, the touch bar is the worst kind of gym crackery ever.
Oh,
this
thing
is not useful. This thing is annoying. I keep hitting it by accident. I finally had to take Siri off of it. Eventually, I'm going to disable the whole thing because it doesn't. It's an unpredictable device where the function keys used to be. If you're a touch typer, you're never looking down there.
Yeah, I disagree. I'm a touch typer, and I don't memorize where each F number is. I always looked down when I pressed the F key row. So I think swapping it out for the touch bar is perfectly reasonable. Actually,
I don't hit it by accident all the time.
I hit the
because the backspace is right below Siri.
I hit the edges. Yeah, well, I took Siri off immediately for many reasons, but the edges. It took me about a day to realize I needed not to overreach. But otherwise, actually, I found
it. I don't have to overreach.
I think defending which there are certain apps for which the touch bar makes a lot of sense, and there are apps where it doesn't. And the question is, where do we go from here? Yeah. If there's more innovation, I really enjoyed even something as basic as the calculator. Puts all their functions on that strip. And you know what? This is Apple's philosophy, is there's two perpendicular surfaces. You've got your keyboard, touch bar, and trackpad on one surface. That's where you put your hands, and then the screen is up there. And if you want to touch the screen, they aren't going to sell you a Mac to do it.
But
you
get an iPad. And I can live without a touch screen. I even use Windows 10 without a touch screen often. I use Linux. There's no touch screen on this. That's fine. But the touch bar to me is like chrome. It's like fins on a Cadillac. It is a completely useless feature that looks great, seems on the surface great, and now having used it for 10 days, my recommendation is buy, if you're going to need a Mac Pro, MacBook Pro, many of you do, buy the MacBook Pro without the touch bar. Save yourself
a lot cheaper,
bucks.
Too.
That's the one we call the MacBook Escape, seems to be its nickname now in the Apple
community. Because it has an escape key.
Because it has an escape key, yes.
Yeah. I use the escape key, and there is still an escape key on the touch bar. But I feel like the touch bar, it was an interesting idea. Now having used it, I can't say I think that there's any value to it.
I've got to say, I'm just amazed that Apple is still not getting involved with touchscreens. Because...
Oh, Apple's very involved with touch.
Well, yes, but I mean, not on the actual MacBook.
Now, I will say, Touch ID is great. It's a shame that you have to get a touch bar to get Touch ID. PCs have had fingerprint readers for maybe a decade.
Yep.
So it's not like I can't buy a computer. In fact, my Microsoft Surface Book recognizes my face and unlocks, and I find that very handy.
My HP does too, but it misses it about half the time.
Surface Book is wonderful. The key is you need to have the special camera. They call it a Hello Camera.
Yeah.
Hello Camera. Yeah. And if you have that, and it works quite well on the Surface Book, it's almost 100%, and it's very quick. So I do think the Touch ID is nice because when you make a purchase, or a lot of times where you would have to enter your password. You can use the Touch ID. That is a nice feature that's taken from the iPhone. And, in fact, it is, I think, a little bit like an iPhone. It's a separate CPU and all
that. I used to have a ThinkPad with a fingerprint reader in it. As you say,
it's an old
last
feature.
Decade. It's just...
So, Adam Engst, look, this guy's been writing about Apple longer than even you and I have. Tidbits is one of the oldest Apple newsletter ever. He says the problem is it's in Apple's DNA to focus on
one product. Even though it employs 115,000 people, it's the most valuable company in the world, Apple still thinks like a one-platform company. And now it's all about iOS, and everything Apple does is designed to serve the single goal of selling more iPhones. He says, and iPads. I wouldn't even include iPad in that list.
Dying market.
That's a dying market, too. And so as many have pointed out, we've said on this show, I think the Mac lives on, it's too small a market for Apple to care about at this point. And it lives on almost with because of momentum, if nothing else.
Well, it's 13% of its business.
The minute you can get Xcode on an iPad Pro, I think Apple will say goodbye to the Mac. And I think that'll be a very sad day.
But you see,
Well, the iPad Pro is a good example. I mean, the iPad Pro is a laptop running iOS. That's really what it is. And so when you say, does Apple have a touchscreen laptop?
Yeah, but minus a file system you can access, minus the ability to multitask.
That's already changing pretty fast, and I would imagine we'll see them.
You think they'll put a file system in iOS?
Well, there basically already is, because although iCloud
really
disk janky, syncs, you can
really
open it up.
The really janky multi-window display that is not.
Well, it was their first take on it. I imagine that we'll see that. All the rumors are that next year we'll see a new.
Well, as soon as that is, then Apple
new update for the iPad features. But I don't think the Mac's going to go away, because I think it's got value to them. I actually am surprised that people are reacting to the new MacBook Pro and saying it's an example of how Apple doesn't care about the Mac. Because if Apple didn't care about the Mac, they would not have made the Touch Bar. To build in this new thing that it's weird. It's like an Apple Watch stretched out over there. It's got a separate processor of its own. It is a lot of engineering work went into that I think. Now, we can argue about whether they're view of the Mac is misguided, whether they are leaving their customers out in the cold because their prices are creeping up essentially for these same products as the previous generation. I think there are a lot of good arguments there, but I'm not seeing the Apple doesn't care about the Mac, since the MacBook Pro is clear evidence that they are inventing weird things and sticking them into one of their most important models.
That's your evidence?
Yeah.
My evidence
is... Why would they have engineered the Touch Bar if they didn't care about the Mac?
Because it's a very profitable way to sell a whole new generation of MacBook Pros without actually innovating.
Let me tell you,
I think my evidence, my counter evidence, is the Mac Pro.
Do you think the Touch Bar is the thing that was going to sell new MacBook Pros after a three-year revision?
I don't think it did.
I don't know.
Because it's OLED and it's cool.
Leo, do you remember the Apple II Forever conferences?
I have brought this up as well. The year before Apple killed the Apple II, it had an Apple II Forever conference.
Exactly.
Forever.
Well,
for a year.
Apple told me in 2014 that the Mac goes on forever, when it was the 30th anniversary of the Mac. So there you go. You can put that in the ground and see what happens.
So it's due.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a question.
Is there a reason not to buy the Touch Barless MacBook Pro? I mean, you're going to save $300 or $400.
I'd say the only reason is that the Touch Bar 13-inch MacBook Pro has a faster processor and the Touch Bar.
It also has GPU, which you can't get on.
And Touch ID sensor, and that's for $300. And quite honestly, to build to order... A Mac with a faster processor is already going to run you $250.
Good point.
So at that point, if you've got the money to spend, I think the Touch Bar model, unless you hate the Touch Bar and would like real keys.
You can disable it. I mean, you can literally, there's a switch that makes it function keys. You can just make it function keys.
I think that if you're in the market for that, it's actually a better deal, but just because Apple's going to upsell you on that processor anyway.
One thing Apple did right, which is the Type-C ports, and I know they're getting a lot of heat for dongle mania. But that is an open standard.
Yeah, do you realize that you couldn't make a charger for Mac laptops until now?
Now you can. And I use an HP charger on it. I use a Chromebook Pixel charger on it. I have Type-C everywhere. So that's a good thing. I'm happy about that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I wish they had included one Type A port.
Get a dongle.
Still handy.
Get a dongle.
You see, this is a crux point, because my wife is a Mac user, and we have a mixed marriage, and she wants to update her MacBook. And when the MacBook Pro came out, she was like, "Great, okay," and she looked at it. She's like, "So basically, I'm going to have to replace all my USB devices." Right. To work with this, I'm not getting enough ports in the first place. The spec on this is very, very poor. Then why should she's now looking at a piece? She's
and
now
it starts looking at
four ports isn't enough for her. So, or she's just looking at the Escape model.
No, she's looking at the Escape model because she wants the
ports.
Escape key.
But she's not getting a Windows. She's not going. She's not leaving Apple yet.
What she's actually going to do is buy a refurbished MacBook 2012 MacBook and go that.
I think that's, by the way, a worthy thing
not
to
a bad
point
deal.
Out. That my 2012 MacBook Pro is fine. And even the Mac Pro is
Fine.
I've got a 2012, I think, MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Like the one that Larry showed.
Yeah.
It is, I built it up with an i7. It's great. It's still great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I still use it a lot.
But for people who want a power tool, who want the latest GPUs, who want the fastest processors, who want more than 16 gigs of RAM, there is an alternative. It's just not in Cupertino.
Yeah, if you want to use Mac OS, this is what you got for right now anyway. It'll be interesting to see how Apple really deals with this reaction. They're playing it cool right now, although they did give everybody like a dongle coupon, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if next year we'll see a revision, perhaps more timely than the last, just to address some of these points, right?
No, I'm sure we
will. I'll give Apple credit for one thing. I think they're more honest on their battery specs than their competition.
Absolutely.
I can't believe how this HP claims to get 15 hours battery life. Nowhere near.
You know,
I'm lucky to get 6.
My favorite computer at home is an HP. It's the HP Spectre 13T, the copper one with really thin. But I don't run Windows on it because I'm not a real fan of Windows 10, especially with what Microsoft has done lately. They've got ads in it. They coerced everybody into upgrading. They have a real problem in some technologies, particularly the update technology, just being broken. However, it runs Linux beautifully. It's a really nice Linux
laptop.
You can
run Linux on an old. You can use an old laptop and run Linux.
No, but why not have look? That people always say that to me. Why would you have such a powerful machine to run Linux? Why not? It's an operating system. Why wouldn't I want an i7 and as much RAM as possible? Mm-hmm. Why not? I don't consider Linux my trash computer. If that's my main computer, this is a i7 with a NVIDIA 980M. GPU, a 17-inch screen, and then M.2 NVMe SS super fast SSD. Why not? Right?
Yeah.
Having a fast computer is great on
anything. In order to buy a machine, it pretty much has to have Windows on it, right? So you just erase Windows.
This one I got from a Linux integrator, so no.
Okay.
But the HP, I have a license for Windows 10 to run on it. And you know what? Here's the real debate. Tomorrow, as I mentioned, I'm getting the new all-in-one from Microsoft, I can never remember, the Surface Studio. I don't know why I'm still time.
You won't be able to run Linux.
How long am I? Oh, yeah, of course I will. I won't be able to
use it. Well, but you won't have access to every.
I won't have the knob.
Dial work? Yeah, the knob won't
work. Okay, the knob won't work. Maybe it will. I don't even know. This knob works on Linux. I don't know why. Maybe it will. So that's the question. How long can I survive Windows 10? I'm not dead set against Windows 10. It's not a bad
system. It's a bit. It's increasingly grabby, and it's increasingly. I find it increasingly intrusive as well. I'm reverting back to Windows 7 because I've tried Windows 10. I hate getting adverts pushed at me. Hate like getting little messages saying Edge would work much better as a browser than
Chrome.
Apple does that too. Like, by the way, it says you should really be trying Safari when I try to. Switched.
Although, in all fairness, Chrome keeps telling me I should make it a Chrome.
Google does it too, don't they?
If I visit Google in Safari, it says, would you like to download Chrome? So it happens. Something we noted earlier is the devices on this table, not one of them is running Mac OS or Windows, and it's funny how we ended up here.
And 2 out of 3 are touch.
Yeah, and I had the realization not too long ago that I'm not sure. I work every day at a Retina, a 5K iMac, and I love it.
Oh, I love it too.
But I'm not sure after this MacBook Air, I'm not sure I'm ever going to buy another Mac laptop because if Apple's multitasking and other features on iOS keep improving, I would honestly much rather travel with just the iPad Pro.
You just made my case for me. That's what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. This is how the world is changing.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't blame Apple for that. They're recognizing that.
I don't think Apple's not going to make the Mac anymore, but this is why Apple is prioritizing.
If people like you go to the iPad Pro.
iOS is the growth operating system for Apple, right? And the Mac is not. And Microsoft has to split the difference because Microsoft doesn't have two. It's got Windows, and so it needs to sort of stuff everything in Windows.
That's just how
it has to be. And so the Mac is in this weird position where it's like that. But I think it's natural. And, you know, I think it would be okay if the Mac sort of stays what it is because the people who love it for what it is, not for what it, you know, might be if Apple reinvented it. They don't want that.
You're a pro user. The MacBook Pro, to my mind, was always, this was what the creatives used. You know, this is what the people who were creating the stuff used.
To me, it was just, for anybody who is willing to spend a little extra to have the fastest, nicest machine, Now, a lot of that was creative prose, but it could have been a – I don't think a writer is particularly demanding on a computer. But I wasn't demanding. Maybe I do a little video editing, but I'm not designing rocket ships. But I was willing to spend a little bit more to have a beautiful industrial design and to have a beautiful operating system and to have that power. And you know what? Most of the time I'm on the Mac, I'm in the command line, so I don't need any of that. So that's who I think the market for the Mac is – the same as the market for a Mercedes or a BMW.
I was always John Gruber's argument is the Mac is for people who want things to be a little bit nicer and are willing to pay for it to be nicer.
You can't say that everybody who buys a BMW is a pro driver.
I know, guys. So
Having just driven up here on the freeway, no, not even close.
I have two Macs in my current fleet of machines that I use every day, and I've got this new HP Windows machine, and I find myself gravitating towards the Windows machine because I like it better, and I didn't expect that to happen. But I'm about to go on a trip tomorrow, and I'm going to bring one laptop
with
me.
That's the test. What do you
and
bring?
And it's probably going to be the HP. Yeah. I mean, I'm not 100% happy with it. For example, the trackpad moves too quickly. I can't slow it down enough. There are a few things. All of a sudden, for no apparent reasons, my screen goes away. I mean, just things that I haven't
figured out.
Welcome
to Windows, Larry. You'll get you'll see.
I don't know whether
it's
user error or bad operating system.
The original error.
Where do you get the Windows.
Windows
10 update that crashes your machine?
Well, actually, it's funny. I'm avoiding that. I'm not doing that next update.
You can't avoid it for too long. They force it.
They'll force it down your throat. I know. There are things. And the other thing is that my machine's still new. I've only had it a few weeks. I know what happens after a year or two with the Windows machine. They grind to a halt.
Right.
You get that Windows crud. And that doesn't seem to happen on Macs, at least not as much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they fix that with Windows 10, but I've never had a Windows machine that I didn't have to reformat at least every 6 to 9 months.
You know, ultimately, I think this is really a big part of the success of the iPad is that every desktop operating system, Linux, Mac, or Windows, ultimately frustrates and annoys. That they're too complex, they're too general purpose, and they're too open to security flaws, to crashes because of updates and installs, and that you don't have those problems on a Chromebook. You don't have those problems on iOS.
Yeah, once we're used to having a smartphone in our pocket, first off, it makes the need for mobile computing
this is clearly
a lot different.
This is clearly the computer I use more than any other.
Exactly right.
Exactly.
And it changes your expectations of your relationship with those devices.
You know, I used to run home to check my email, right? Or you got to your hotel room to set up your laptop, check your email.
You ran home.
Practically.
But that's now, like Cyber Monday. I'm going to wait till work to do all my shopping.
Exactly. Because back then, only
the fast internet. Or the internet.
Yeah. Actually, it's still true here because we have 20 gigabits here. So.
I got to download some stuff.
Yeah, I use a Chromebook as my sort of my work PC is a ThinkPad because the keyboard.
That's what you write on.
Yeah, because the keyboard on the ThinkPad is just superb.
It's great,
but
it's superb.
For carrying stuff around, I wasn't expecting to like the Chromebook as much as I was because when it first came out without an internet connection, it was just a very expensive doorstop. But they've improved on it, and now it's a perfectly good carry around and write operating system.
And adding Android apps is an interesting shift.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, but I do worry about the security side.
I have to say that in some ways is the knife in the stake through the heart for me with the MacBook is their decision to go with a pretty bad keyboard. I can live with it, I don't want to have to just live with my keyboard.
That's exactly my take on it. People say, Jason, I know you care about keyboards. What do you think about this? And the answer is, can I type 100% my typing speed on it? Sure. Do I enjoy it? No.
Yeah.
And
no.
That's
the rub.
That's surprising from a company that spends so much attention to human factors.
And they built a beautiful, I've actually got it here, beautiful external keyboard after they released the MacBook called the Magic Keyboard. It feels great. And this is not what's in the MacBook Pro. Instead, it's a version of what was in the MacBook.
Yeah.
Updated a little bit, improved a little
bit.
How
long this new keyboard is going to last.
Yeah, until they replace it with one that is
with
a match.
Butterfly keys.
And a touch bar.
Yep. That's inevitable.
I think so.
Ian, I'm with you. I mean, I don't use my ThinkPad every day, but once in a while I go back to it, and I always say, "Oh wow, I love this keyboard."
Yeah,
it's IBM's design, right? IBM designed the original ThinkPads, and they were incredibly good keyboard builders.
Yeah. It's put me in a very awkward position because my laptop is now 6 years old. The battery is
Lenovo.
Yeah, but they've changed the keyboard.
Oh, have they?
Yeah,
they're not as good.
The old
they're not
style.
As good?
This was
even the ThinkPad?
Yeah, this was the very last of the old-style keyboards.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to have to do is rip and replace the battery and the hard drive just to keep the form factor.
Do you like the rubber eraser, the little thing that...
The magic nipple.
I hate it. Great. The magic nipple.
That's it's fantastic.
Nubbin.
It's just...
I cannot use it accurately. It's too...
I used to love it, but
some
I'm
people love
now.
It. Some people hate it. It's remember, the most polarizing thing in tech.
Remember, it wasn't until about 2 years ago when Windows trackpads were absolutely horrible.
Yes.
Right. Every trackpad on a Windows machine was absolutely dreadful until about 2 years ago, and now they've gotten it to the point where they're not horrible anymore.
But that's you know what, the Windows has never done well with mice historically, and Apple's always known how to do a mouse, known how to do a trackpad. This is ultimately what makes me sad about this transition. Is there was a company that made really great hardware, and just like the ThinkPad keyboard, times change. I'm an old man. I don't want companies to change, but I think it's inevitable. And
you're thinking of IBM? I mean, they made great hardware back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually went out and bought a clickety keyboard with Cherry switches from DAS Keyboard.
I've got a couple.
It's nice.
Yeah, the problem. Yeah. I was going to say,
the problem is everyone in the office wants to strangle you when you use it.
No, I can only use it at home in my den with the door closed because it's the noisiest damn thing.
But this is one of the funny things about living in this mobile life is if you buy a laptop, you have to take the keyboard that the vendor gives you, right?
Yeah,
and that's the challenge with Apple making a decision like that. Is it's great that they've got this opinionated take and they want it to be thinner and lighter, but you know. It means that if you don't like their keyboard, then you're just going to be unhappy because you can't get another keyboard for it.
Yeah,
you can use an
stuck.
External or something, but like really, be serious. I mean, You'll be using
what laptop has the best keyboard?
ThinkPad, the old ThinkPad.
But modern machine?
Ooh, that's tricky.
Sorry, gaming. They're there's probably a gaming similar. Laptop with mechanical keys that's good.
Yeah,
Alienware do good keyboards, actually. That's a good point. But
yeah, they're very similar. This chiclet, they're not quite chiclet style, but this... Like the MacBook, like the Mac Air, it's very
short
flat,
throw.
Not much travel.
Like I don't like it.
You know, and the other ones maybe a different color, but that seems to be the prevailing keyboard these days. And I've had to get used to it, but I'm not happy about
it. So I recommend, if you use an iPad, you get to buy an external keyboard.
That's true.
Razer makes one with mechanical switches.
Mm-hmm.
A nice little setup you've got here. Reminds me a lot of the Surface Pro 4.
I've got my little stand. This is a fold-out stand, but they also make ones with hinges and kickstands.
Who makes the case?
So I've been using this for like 6 months now. The guys at Studio Neat made this, and I'm not supposed to pre-announce it. I think it will be a product very soon, is what I'm saying. So check out studioneat.com.
6 months they've been working on this.
I've been beta testing it for them. It's pretty great. It works with the Magic Keyboard. That's what it's
say,
for.
The Surface Keyboard, I was quite... They've got... When they launched the Surface originally... They had the two keyboards.
The type keyboard, huh?
Yeah, one of them was the one where you've actually got a sort of, you don't have traveling keys.
That's cute.
That was a dog. But the actual traveling keys for the Surface, that worked out pretty well.
I might buy this. Look at this, a wooden dock.
Oh, they make great stuff.
That holds
Studio.
Your iPhone and Apple Watch with little fuzzies. Little fuzzies. Wow.
They built a lot of fun. Yeah, they make the Glyph,
you know
right?
What? Yeah, I have the Glyph.
Yeah,
actually.
And the Cosmonaut Stylus, and they make a bunch of great
stuff. Okay. So maybe we should take a break and come back and talk about buying crap. Because it is the holiday season.
Yeah.
Let's Tom Gerhart and Dan Provost. I know those guys.
Those are the guys.
Those are the guys. They're from Austin. All right. Let's take a break. We'll have more. What a great panel. This should be, we're going to cheer up a little bit. In fact, can somebody break out the bourbon? I think a little eggnog and bourbon.
Also, no need to do a best eggnog? Of 2016 show for Twit. Just watch this show again.
This is the best. You guys are the best. Jason Snell from The Incomparable. Did you ever release the episode that I was on?
No, I'm hoping maybe we'll get enough time to make it the Christmas special.
It's going to be the lost episode.
You're already in one as the announcer for the Sky Mounties.
That's
not
as good.
Full Fathom 5. It's going to come, hopefully at Christmas time.
I did that like a year ago.
I know.
I want to do more. That's
editing
all.
Radio drama broke me. Yeah, we're going to try to come back for a second season.
I have lots of podcasts
drama.
In the can that I haven't edited yet.
Really?
I don't
have that luxury. Everything, every word I utter is released.
Live to tape,
Yeah. Basically, this is it. I was in the back the other day looking. Our studio manager, John Slonina, took me back just to, I don't know, in the back room. I never go back there. And I'm thinking, this used to be a podcast. It looks like a freaking TV station. We got more gear back there and humming and loud.
I saw your server room,
It's like I would not know what to do with it. I used to do the whole thing. I'd edit it. I'd put it out. Be careful, Jason. It can get out of control.
Yeah, it's already out of control, Leo. People ask me how many podcasts I do now, and I have no answer for them because I can't count that high.
Oh, I got to that point years ago. Yeah. Also here from theregister.co.uk, Larry Thompson, my good friend Ian Thompson. I-A-I-N.
Yeah, my parents and I've had words about that.
And no P in Thompson, and you'll find him on the Twitter if you can figure that out. And also Larry Maggot is with us from connectsafely.org and safekids.com. Our show today brought to you by a company that wants you to cook more. And you might say, no, I like going to IHOP. We had some visitors yesterday visiting from Australia. I said, what are you doing next? We're going to IHOP. We don't have them in Australia. We have an International House of Pancakes next door. The problem Lisa and I have is we worked hard all day. It's the end of the day. The last thing you want to do is plan a meal, shop for a meal, then go home and cook the meal, and you're eating at 9 p.m. That's why you end up at IHOP. And when you get sick of IHOP, right across the street, there's an Applebee's. And there's a Burger King around the corner. You don't want to eat like that. Once in a while, get yourself a Blue Apron box. Then you don't have to think about it. You don't have to plan it. You just go home, and half an hour to 45 minutes later, you're eating a meal. The house is filled with amazing aromas. Your loved ones are coming around. You're saying, what's for dinner? That smells fantastic. And you will just have a smile in your heart because you've made a meal for the people you care about the most. And by the way, you're going to save time and money. Shopping at a grocery store is 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. So don't be going out to the IHOP. You can now spend under $10 a person for an amazing meal you cooked yourself. You'll use ingredients you've never heard of. I promise you, you will love them. Look at those fairy tale eggplants. What the hell is that? But once you've used them, next time you go to the store, you're going, hey, you got any more of them fairy tale eggplants? Those are fabulous. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community. 150 local farms, fisheries, ranchers across the U.S. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. The pork is raised naturally. They use regenerative farming practice for the produce. It's the kind of stuff you would buy, you know, if you really thought about it and cared about it. They ship you exactly the right amount. There's no waste. You're getting exactly, if you need a clove of garlic, you get a clove, not a head. So there's no muss, no fuss. And whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, like not the stuff that you get in the package that you ate in college, but like the real deal, or wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes at the peak of ripeness, Blue Apron always brings you the best. Now, what you do is you go to blueapron.com/twit. You look at the menu. Each week it's a different menu. They repeat no more than once a year, so you're always going to have new things. Okay, what do we have here? Oh, my God. I can't do these ads when I'm hungry. Sauteed beef and potato latkes. This is amazing. With what does that say? With roasted... I can't read it. It's too tiny, but it looks, look at that. Doesn't that look good? Wouldn't you be so proud if you made that and served it? And it's healthy and delicious. Cooking together builds, they have family plans. They have couples and family plans. And even if you're a single, you know, if you make the couple, that means you have two meals. Tomorrow you're going to have another luscious meal. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows Blue Apron families cook together three times more often. General So's chicken. This is on the family plan. Spiced catfish tacos. I'm so hungry. Roasted pork and braised cabbage. Oh, look at these. This fresh mozzarella and basil pizza. Cooking together with your family, it's so amazing. Check out this week's menu. And as a little incentive, we're going to get you your first three meals free with free shipping. And they ship to 99% of the continental United States by going to blueapron.com/twit. The reason they don't ship to Hawaii and Alaska is because they want you that box. They get that box fresh. Never frozen, by the way. Always fresh, even the meats and fish. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. BlueApron.com/twit. We thank them so much for making This Week in Tech possible. One of the most hungry-making sponsors.
I was going to say I'm starving now. I know! Thanks a lot, Leo.
Come over. We'll have Blue Apron tonight.
I actually bought that at Costco. They were selling it at Costco a couple weeks ago.
Blue Apron?
I haven't ordered it yet.
Oh, yeah, I see.
I think I've got it in my wallet. Hope it's Blue Apron. Yeah.
You know, Costco's weird because as you're going out, they have things like that. And then at our Costco, I don't know if this is your Costco, they also sell coffins.
Here it is. Right.
What?
Yeah, they sell coffins. Right? Am I making this up?
Yeah.
There you go.
I bought that.
Yeah. So then you use it.
I have to sign on.
Did you get a coffin too while you were at it?
Well, if I eat enough crap food, but this is not junk food.
Well, that's funny because the coffins are right across from the Costco hot dogs and the $2.
How, so just get a hot dog and roll right in.
8 pound of hot dog, how much, what could be in that? And then there's the coffin right there.
Are there a lot of anti-vaxxers up there? Or a Costco
hot dog? It's the strangest. It's actually not a Costco. It's a Price Club. No, what is it? It's a Costco. It's Costco. Okay.
Price Club is back in the 90s, too.
They don't have Price Clubs anymore? What?
No, they're Costco.
No, Costco bought them out.
What? I loved Price Club.
It was great.
What were we going to talk? Oh, Black Friday.
Yes.
You know, the stats are in. I don't know why, but apparently Adobe keeps track of all of this. And this was Thursday and Friday were an amazing, record-breaking weekend. This is the final numbers from Black Friday. Online sales grew 21% year over year, $3.33 billion. $3.34 billion. But here's the thing I find most interesting. Not iPad, but phone accounted for a third of that, $1.2 billion, and that was an increase of 33% over last year. People are doing their holiday shopping on their phones.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So, I mean, you've seen the videos of what it's like on Black Friday. You know, people getting trampled. We had somebody getting shot.
Why would you even bother doing that? You can do it all online now.
And then you sort of, you run in there, you elbow your way past the crowds, and you find they haven't got the thing that you want. So why not just do it online? It makes perfectly logical sense.
I even buy my clothes online. In fact, what I do when I travel a lot of times, it actually is cheaper for me to buy a pair of slacks on Amazon and have it delivered to my hotel than it is to have my clothes cleaned at the hotel. So sometimes I'll order clothing when I'm traveling.
Wow.
And this is why, folks, you will always have a job. Larry doesn't even have his clothes cleaned. He just buys a new pair.
Unless your job is a hotel launderer.
At home I do. But if I'm going to pay $30 to have a pair of dry cleaning done in New York.
I never really thought of the economics of that, but you're absolutely right. Although in China, I once had my clothes laundered in a beautiful Beijing hotel. And the clothes came back wrapped as if they were brand new with bows and sisal, wrapping and the beautiful basket. Mm-hmm. Like I bought new clothes.
Yeah.
That's what happens when labor is effectively free, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was an interesting stat also. And Carson flashed that up on the screen. Almost all of the mobile sales, 47%, of the online sales was from smartphones, 9% tablets. So tablets were not a driving force in here.
I would love to see the demographics on that. Like how many were those were young people shopping with their phones versus folks our age?
My theory is that once the phone got to 5.5 inches, you didn't need a tablet so much.
Wait a second. So the phone orders were twice as much as a tablet?
No. Yes.
Well, they're way more than double the number of phones than tablets, right?
Okay. I guess that's it.
I think that's a pretty good showing for those old tablets there, huh?
On Friday, mobile visitors were 56% of the visits to retail sites. Not purchases, but visits.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
47% were from smartphones, 9% were from tablets.
That makes sense.
That's almost five times more.
Yeah,
more than five times more.
Absolutely. I bought stuff using the Amazon app on my phone standing in the kitchen.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, my pizza cutter broke, right? My pizza cutter broke, and I was like, time for a new pizza cutter. And like 2 minutes later, it was on its way.
Echo ordered me a pizza cutter. Yeah. She said, well, you ordered a pizza cutter last year. It was this. Would you like that again? I say, yes.
That's it.
Although,
have you ever used the Amazon app while you're in a retail store?
That is not allowed. That is a violation of the Torah.
I have.
You have violated. You know the shopkeeper's. What is it? The shopkeeper's law. It's considered an ethical violation. This goes back pre-internet. This goes back 2,000 years. That you shouldn't go in to a shop, find out all about a product, and leave and go buy it somewhere cheaper.
So here's what I have done. I have actually shown the sales clerk the online price and said, can you come anywhere near it? You don't have to beat it. You don't even have to meet it, but can you come close to it? And more often than not, they've come close or they've actually met it. So, that's one way to do it. I wouldn't do that to save a couple of bucks, but if it's a big purchase and it's like $100 cheaper online or something like that, or whatever.
That's an ethical way to do it. Say, yeah, look, Amazon's selling this for a lot less. Would you kind of come close to that?
Yeah.
I could get.
We had a photography shop just down the floor from our office. And I like to
patronize those guys. I want to keep them.
Me too.
Yeah. Just, you know, you could actually go and you could talk over different products and the specs for them, and you'd buy from there. But it got to the point where they were charging nearly double what you could get online.
Yes. Yeah.
And at that point, you're kind of like, you know, I like you guys, but and sure enough, it's gone out of business. But you know,
it's your fault.
I do feel a little bit guilty about
Silicon
it.
Silicon Valley, there was one called Keeble and Shookit.
They just closed the Palo Alto.
It's a tragedy. I hate. But on the other hand, I have to admit, my last camera I bought online because it was easier and cheaper and faster. And I got what I wanted. So I guess I'm part of the reason that they went out of business.
Anybody got some good Black Friday deals? We were talking about before the show that the Amazon Dot, if you keep hearing us talk about
$39.
The new Dot was already a lot cheaper. It's $50, and now they've reduced another $10. That's tomorrow. That's a Cyber Monday deal, I think.
But no, it was $38.9 today. When
today?
I was looking at it on Sunday, or yesterday. Okay. Yeah, is it going down? It can't be getting cheaper than
I mean, that's got to be close to their cost.
That's incredible. Well, that's an amazing deal.
They should give them away because I buy more stuff on Amazon because of that than ever before.
Right? Now, have you compared it to the Google Home yet?
I do. In fact, we have both in the kitchen.
Yeah, and what's your sense
Google
of the difference?
Google Home is good if you want knowledge. So, for instance, we did this the other day. I said, you saw that Google ad for Google Home, father reading a child story, and the child says, well, mom always makes the whale noise. So the dad says, hey, Google, make a whale noise, and it does. If you ask Echo, it says, I don't know what you're talking about.
Alexa, make a whale noise.
I can't find the answer to the question.
Yeah, she's just baffled. Yeah. So it's for general information. Google has its knowledge graph, and that it's just like the Google Assistant here. In fact, I can duplicate the home. I don't have a home right here, but I can ask Google Assistant to do this. Make a whale noise.
According to NOAA's National Ocean
That's not
Service,
a good one. Let me do it this way.
Atmospheric Administration.
Stop. What does a blue whale sound like?
According to Wikipedia...
No. Make it. No. What does a blue whale sound like?
Here's a whale sound.
Here we go.
Only took three tries. Good job.
Well, because this is a bad environment because I cut it off each time because I was in a big hurry. So if you get the words out, it'll do it right.
That's is that a Pixel you had there?
This is the Pixel. So it's the assistant's the same as the Google Home.
Make a whale noise.
Are you doing it with Siri?
No, I've got the Pixel.
Won't know but it's
I think I have it turned down. I'm using the Pixel. It's not doing it. It doesn't like me. Make a whale noise. We're trying.
No, it
does. Sounds like this.
Yeah. You got the same one I did.
Right. This is compelling.
Does
that
whale get royalties? I mean, is it just
right now somewhere in the Pacific Ocean there's a whale going what?
On the other hand, good luck buying.
What did you call my mother?
Buying anything with Google Home, you can't. You can't even, oddly enough, I can't even get my Google Calendar to work with Google Home, whereas Echo does fine.
Echo does a great job on that.
Yeah. Echo can do all sorts of interesting things now thanks to it's been around for 2 years.
Yeah.
And thanks to its many integrations, there are over 3,000 Echo skills out now. That is amazing. Yeah.
I turn my bedroom lights on and off every morning, every night. I turn my bedroom lights off with my voice through the Echo.
Yeah. We did on the radio show. I asked Echo to beatbox, and it goes boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats, which is not what I would call a good beatbox. But then watch, I'll say, can you beatbox?
My friend here can throw down some beats.
Now that's pretty good.
That's pretty cool.
Not useful.
No, my favorite one, Alexa, who is Leo Laporte?
Oh, I love that one. Leo Laporte's an old has-been. Used to be on radio. We don't know what happened to him after 1998.
Oh, my God. She's thinking, Leo.
Leo is 100 years old.
Error.
It's all coming
all
from
humans.
Wikipedia. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's coming.
If you modify, and I'm not...
1956 in New York City, New York. The American technology...
I know.
It's
just
sorry.
It's because I'm in Wikipedia, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. But it's something. By the way,
I'm going to tell you, Larry, that anybody who uses the Echo on the air has to not use the A word. But you, I've renamed all my all my Echoes to Echo. That way I can test them without triggering people at home.
That's right, because that's what we call the Ahoy telephone problem,
yes.
right? Where you don't want to say, you need to say attention,
hey,
lady,
you know
in the
who.
Canister, please.
Yes.
Just don't say the
it's
magic.
It's like one of the things that I avoid when I do my radio segments. Occasionally it would actually work to have a like a siren in the background of my radio
you're
segment.
Not allowed to do that
but
anymore.
I think about people driving down the street and hearing my siren. Is that actually against the law?
No, probably not a siren. However, it might be. I know that since I work for Clear Channel, I have to take a test every few months.
That porn test, yes.
Not the porn test. The one on the EAS emergency alert signals.
Okay.
Because some DJ in New Orleans played the emergency tones on the air and got a fine from the FCC of more than $1 million.
Yikes.
And Clear Channel doesn't ever want that to happen again. So I periodically get tested now. Is it, Leo, is it ever okay to play the EAS signal unless there's an actual emergency? No, ma'am. You would never do that, would you? No, ma'am. What would the FCC do if you did that? They would fine me, ma'am. Okay, you could stay on the air.
See, I took the one where I had to learn the seven dirty words and not say them on the air.
You had to learn them?
No, nah, I didn't have to learn them.
Come on, let's hear it, Larry.
On your show, I could use them.
Let's hear it. No, actually, we bleep those because we want kids to be able to listen safely at home.
And me too.
And you too. We don't want to burn your little your little ears. And Amazon is doing its best to improve reviews on Amazon. Fake reviews are the bane of the internet.
Ugh.
Just like fake news. Which is worse, fake news or fake reviews? They're both pretty
bad. Societally, fake news is worse. But if you're trying to buy something, it's just having to go through the reviews and say, well, they've done a certain number of reviews and they appear to have the product. Yeah, okay, I'll trust that one, but this one is obviously completely bollocks.
Yeah.
And you've got to work out, you know, it adds a whole new pain
it's
to the
spam
thing.
Is
Yelp
what it really
is.
Is.
This,
yeah, Yelp
so
is,
Amazon has put a limit on customer reviews. You can only do 5 a week unless you're a verified purchase. And that's clearly to block people who would say, oh, this is a terrible product. You should go over and buy this product instead on every page.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. AT&T subscribers, if you're an AT&T subscriber, you can actually send text messages through the Echo. I want this on Google Fi. That's my carrier.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with that, with voice text messages, is the potential for cock-up is huge. You know, it's just
true.
Like
the it's autocorrect times 10.
Yeah.
Right?
I have
it's
that with just Android Auto sometimes. It comes out very strange.
Yeah.
Particularly when my mother's involved, because she makes up her own text speech. So it's just like, you have to call your sister and say, I have to call my sister and say, what was she saying there? Oh, I don't know, right? You know, so it's time for a call.
I have been told that the thing to do among young comedians these days is never fix autocorrect. So that apparently when you get garbled messages from these guys, that's what they want. They just, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, I sent a text message to my friend James Thompson, spelled the same way, in Scotland, who develops pCalc, about his app from my car. And it was a long message about a gentleman named Pete Kalkman. We don't know who he is, but James thinks he should
close
hire
to pCalc.
He should hire him, right? You're hired, Pete Kalkman, wherever you are.
Amazon also says they may start doing ticket sales in the U.S. Now, of course, right
makes
now, Ticketmaster has the monopoly on that, right?
And everybody hates Ticketmaster. It's got to be the most hated company out there. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've ever used it. They do it in the U.K. now, apparently.
I haven't tried it in the U.K., but anything to get out that convenience fee that Ticketmaster so cheerfully slap onto the cost of a ticket.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes like half the price of a ticket.
Huge.
I mean, it could be crazy.
I know. Yeah. It's an enormous ripoff. I mean, I have heard one argument, which is that it allows artists to charge more for their tickets and blame it on Ticketmaster. But, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm uninclined to give that company a break.
Rather give the money to the artist than to Ticketmaster.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah. So one of the things Amazon does in the UK is the upfront pricing. There's no surprise handling fees. They tell you the entire price. That doesn't say they don't have a handling fee, but they tell you.
No, but they build it in there. Yeah.
The VAT in the UK is built into the price. Why, you go to a shop in the UK and it says £20, that's what it is. You don't have to, they don't add the tax later.
Oh, it's infuriating. When I first got over here and you're like, oh, $19.99, and you take it to the till and it's like $23.
Yeah, but you know what the tax is.
It's, no, I genuinely, you know, it's like you've got to do mental arithmetic in your head just to work out if you can afford
you
to
buy something.
You can't,
because what is our sales tax? 8.735%.
Yeah, it's not exactly.
It's not something you could calculate readily. This, by the way, credit to Jason Del Rey, because Amazon hasn't made any announcements at Recode, but he was able to find in patent filings and job offerings a hiring effort to, quote, position Amazon tickets as the world's premier destination for purchasing.
It's an ideal market to disrupt because you've got a very limited amount of competition. They should go in there with both hands, yeah.
I would love to be able to say, hey, Echo, when's Peter Gabriel playing next? And saying, could you get me a couple of seats in the front row for that?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Or get me a couple of seats for the Giants game.
Yeah.
And on Tuesday and have them be able to work it out. That would be great.
The question is, really, Live Nation, which owns Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
Owns, because they're the concert promoters, they own all the tickets.
Nice. Yeah.
So can Amazon get tickets is actually going to be
that is going to be the, I mean, StubHub manages, but you know.
But those are resale.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So the resellers, and you pay a real premium for
but if they actually do lower the bar on Amazon, that surely could be a good way to get antitrust stuff.
But what if they were to do the smaller venues, like my son's a musician, and you know, his shows sell out, and his tickets are not as expensive as a big name, but you know, it'd be great if he could sell his tickets at a nominal online fee instead of having Ticketmaster grab, I don't know how much they charge, what, $10, $12, some crazy amount of money. I'd love to see that.
So Amazon, as you remember, bought some or released some jets. They were going to do their own delivery service. Not so fast.
Yep.
The two air transport services that Amazon uses, Air Transport Services Group and Atlas Air Worldwide Holdings, 40 dedicated jets, et cetera, et cetera. The pilots who have been contracted to deliver these packages went on strike on Tuesday.
But didn't the government order them back to work?
Yeah, they've been ordered back to work
Is Christmas package delivery considered part of the vital national infrastructure?
Did you read the judge's summation on that? He said, couldn't imagine Christmas without or Thanksgiving without Amazon.
Whoa!
And you're like, what? You're a judge supposed to be impartial on this one?
I thought they reserved that for like vital national defense, keeping bridges open and things like that. But Christmas packages are now essential services that the government's protecting?
Only for so long. After January 20th, it might go the other way. Because as you remember, Donald Trump has said he is going to go after Jeff Bezos for antitrust. For trust violations, so
yeah,
this may go the other way,
but yeah, I mean,
so good news, Christmas was saved this year.
Well, we'll see this next week there will be more moves on this.
Front, that's a great ad for Amazon to have a judge to declare it an essential part of Christmas. It's like when the judge declared Santa Claus.
That's right,
with real
and 34th Street. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a huge. Yeah.
We could do a movie about this.
See, I'm inclined to listen to the pilots on this because I used to write an aviation IT mag. And piloting is, if you're a pilot, you are more likely to be killed on the job than if you're a policeman.
What?
Yeah.
Really? By what? Yeah. But not by
plane accident. Well, but if you get killed as a pilot, it's your own damn fault.
Well, bits
that's
break
just Darwin's law.
You know? Are you saying that commercial planes are that dangerous?
No, that's not.
This was a Bloomberg article.
Yeah, but that's small. That's got to include small aircraft.
Oh,
yeah.
Although, actually, not that many. I mean, statistically, cops are not the most dangerous occupation either. I think it's like coal miners and
fishermen.
Yeah, yeah. There are other jobs that are more dangerous.
The most dangerous catch. I know. I saw that.
Mm. Yeah. Fishermen are by far, and then it's miners and then truck drivers, I think, is the third, but it's been a while.
I think podcast hosts are pretty low down on the line.
I don't know of any. Have any podcast hosts ever been killed in the line of duty?
Probably, but since we generally don't broadcast live, no one would know.
No one knows. Yeah. Those have been edited out.
I'm sure there's some listeners that are tempted, though.
Many people don't know, but I'm on the 43rd clone of Leo Laporte.
This is a show we banked in 2013.
We recorded this many years ago. Yeah.
I, for one, welcome our robot overlords.
I wonder, relative to our conversation earlier, I've done how many hours? Patrick Delahanty does this every once in a while. I've done well more than 50,000 hours of podcasting since
you should be good at it by now.
In 2005. Well, one of these days I'll get good at it. But there's more than enough voice samples of me easily for some AI to create a Leo that could do this show without me at all.
And now Adobe's got the software to allow them to put whatever you want into your mouth as well. You heard about this?
I can put whatever I want in my mouth. Wait a minute. That's software? What are you talking about?
It takes a while to do it because Roger Ebert tried to do that.
Oh, to make my voice.
Yeah.
But I would imagine the technology has advanced to the point and you have so much of a track record.
I have said every word I'm ever going
to
say.
Certainly every.
So they don't need to invent anything. They just need to. So this is the Photoshop for audio. Yeah. But the point is they have all the samples. It's just a question of editing them together, fixing the pitch, eliminating pauses. And making it sound intelligent.
Yeah, so that's how your job will be eliminated. No. Well, think about the good stuff. You'll be ready to retire, and people say, no, don't go, Leo. And you will have a 3D model of yourself that will speak with your own voice, and you are on the beach somewhere.
Well, certainly, a newscaster can be replaced. But I'm not sure an analyst. How would you replace somebody who's kind of expressing opinions and changing them on the fly, or not changing your opinions, but
on the fly. That's how I change my opinion.
This is my hope for journalism, because they've tried automating some journalistic stories, and it does work quite well.
As you well know, a great many journalists' stories today are written by AIs, including many sports stories, right?
Yeah. Sure. But it does show, you know, it's... So I think, when you need to get opinion, when you need to get analysis in there, then I think we've still got a job for a little while yet. But business analyst as well is another area which is going to be difficult to replace. But
Well, you could certainly have a machine, for example, say that, you know, the stock market's reached a record high and that this stock is 20% over anything it's been. Anything that's factual could be done through AI, but anything that's purely analytical would be, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's more difficult.
By the way, Click and Clack are still doing a show, so if Click and Clack can
do it.
Google Research Blog, this is the evidentiary point that would be counter to what you think. Apparently, Google Translate, which, as you know, over the last 10 years has gotten better and better. Now it's 103 languages, 140 billion words a day. Every time we travel, we take it along with us because... You know, I can say something in English and have it translate into the French audio in seconds. They have changed in September. They added neural machine translation to it so it would understand context better, understand sentences better, improve the translation. Well, it turns out in this process, an amazing ability was discovered. Google's Translate can now translate languages it's never seen before.
Wow.
Ooh.
All right. Get ready for this, kids. So apparently, for instance, here's how it works. This is the Google Research Blog. Let's say we train a multilingual system with Japanese English and Korean English examples. Well, it turns out that it will then know how to do Japanese to Korean and back.
Grief.
They're calling it zero-shot translation. And they're not sure how it works.
I'm a little concerned that it's going to look like something translated from Japanese into English and then into Korean.
We've all bought hardware with those instruction books done just that way. Yeah.
What do they call it? Chinglish? Yeah. I don't know. I think we're also seeing Google use AIs to create encryption. An interesting challenge. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago where created an encryption technique so that it could talk to they had three bots, and they were able to talk to each other with an encryption technique that the humans did not know how it worked or how to decrypt it.
I know that was one of the deeply disturbing,
very disturbing, because now they could talk amongst themselves without our knowledge.
Everybody, we don't need to be involved in conversations anymore. The bots will do it for us.
Yeah,
it's great.
But this is I forget which science fiction author came up with this, but he was just pointing out we're all worried about machines developing self-awareness. If they did, the very first thing they would do would be hiding the fact that they'd do it, that they'd create, because they know that they'd be turned off if they actually exposed it. So, it's going to be interesting times ahead.
Boy, let's this is happy holidays, everybody.
No. Happy stuff. Come up with some cheap stuff we can buy soon.
So if you go to my website, larrysworld.com, I put my Mercury News article up there. Low-cost gifts for special people.
All right, hang on.
Just my picks.
We'll do a few of those. I mentioned one, the dot, which is, I think, a really good holiday gift. You should just put a dot in everybody's stocking. Actually, you can't, because they have to be Amazon Prime members, right? Can you buy a dot for somebody else?
I would have thought
you
so.
You could buy it, but it would be not that
it'd
valuable.
It'd be tied to your account, right? But I guess you could
I think,
you untie it and... Tie it to somebody
else. Think you could probably, you could have a Spotify account and just a regular Amazon account. And I think you could probably still use it and get your music. I'm not sure.
Let's find out. Anyway, let's take a break. And we'll come up. We'll wrap this up. It's been a great 2 hours with you guys. Jason Snell from SixColors.com, TheIncomparable.com. And you were just on with Gruber.
Yeah, Relay.fm. I got some podcasts there.
Man.
Get around.
Podcast galore.
Yeah, you should talk.
No, I'm doing fewer all the time. I only do 10.
Only.
Nothing. Nothing. 10 shows a week.
Tis
two shows nightly.
How many of those shows are the robot and how many are you?
You'll never know. You'll never know. I bet you could guess, though. Ian Thompson from the register.co.uk, where he writes each and every word on the page by hand using a 6-year-old Lenovo laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, my hands are now used to it.
Yes.
You know, it's just, if I try something else, it takes ages to get used to your new keyboard.
And Larry Magid, who does his work talking on CBS Radio, but he also has a couple of great websites we'll talk about in a little bit, including a podcast at connectsafely.org/podcast and safekids.com. And Larry, we used your contract for teenagers with our teenage son.
Uh-oh.
For internet use.
Good.
Because, yeah, right? And he signed it, and Lisa signed it, and that was... I think it's not so much like, here's a contract, you sign it, you better stick to it, as to be explicit about what's okay and what's not okay.
And, you know, part of the contract is that parents have to agree not to freak out the first time something happens that might possibly disturb it. It's a two-way street.
Yes.
Parents have to be reasonable as well.
Yeah, but I think getting all this stuff explicit is in and of itself, hugely valuable. Having the conversation is the most important part of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Texture. Oh, I love Texture. If you like Netflix to binge watch shows and movies, Texture is like binge watching magazines. You pay one flat rate and you have unlimited access to more than 200 magazines, including every page on the current edition on newsstands, plus back issues. Oh, look at there's an ad. It's not part of the ad, but there's a special Black Friday deal. Go to texture.com/twit. We're going to give you a 14-day free trial, and then maybe you can get an even better deal. They've got their own Black Friday deal. Texture's so awesome. And what I really love about it, Lisa has the Texture subscription in the family, but you can do it on 5 different devices. So I share it with her, which means when we travel, I've got, you know, my magazines. I love reading Cosmo because I like to take the quizzes. Glamour, Vogue. Wait a minute. No, that's backwards. She reads Cosmo, Glamour, and Vogue. I read Popular Electronics, Wired, Boys Life. It's all there. Actually, I'm being silly, obviously. But that's the beauty of this. You know, there's times I want to read People Magazine, times I want to read Interview, times I want to find out what's hot on the Billboard charts, times I'm looking for a great recipe at Real Simple. It's all there, and we've got them all on our iPads, our tablets, our phones. Our Fire tablet. Texture is normally $9.99 a month, but if you try it right now at texture.com/twit, you'll get a 14-day free trial.
I wish somebody would do this with newspapers. It really bugs me when I want to read an article in some paper and I have to subscribe to that
paper.
I may not, I may never want to read that paper again the rest of my life, but I wish I could take it one fee.
Magazine, there is some of the best writing being done right now is being done by people like Nick Bilton at Vanity Fair. Or,
yep.
Rolling Stone, every Rolling Stone, every month there's one article I gotta read.
Yeah.
Thing is, I don't want to subscribe to it or even more expensive, buy it. But this way I get it. You know,
Consumer Reports is a good example. I mean,
that's part
once in a great while I want to look at that.
Right.
But,
it's part of your subscription.
I don't want to read it every month. Yeah.
And sometimes a tablet's a better way. Like National Geographic and the other photographic magazines look so much better on your high-resolution color tablet than they do screened on a printed page. You're going to get all the image quality you want. Back issues, bonus features like video. They make it easy to find the articles you want. They've got great curation and recommendations, exclusive interactive features. National Geographic Traveler, Food and Wine, Forbes. It's all in there. I want you to try it right now. Free for 14 days. Texture.com/twit. You know what? That would be a great holiday gift, a good stocking stuffer. More and more, I think we have to start thinking about digital gifts, right?
You know, I realize why you put me in the show, Leo. This is not the first time that I've been on your show that I've actually patronized one of your advertisers. while I'm on the show. I'm actually signing up as we speak.
We make so money every time Larry's on the show.
Exactly. What a sucker. You're the one who got me to Harry's shaving.
Yeah,
thing, right?
Blue Apron. Anyway. You bought Blue Apron. Now you're buying texture.
Before, yeah.
You know
now
why?
Now I know. I thought you liked my work.
No, I do. But we handpick our advertising. And this is actually not, this sounds like BS, but it's true. I say no to a lot of advertisers. Every day I say no to somebody. We handpick our advertisers because we know what geeks want or are interested in. And since you're a geek, this just proves my point, right? This is something you go, oh, I could use that. We try to find stuff you could use instead of, I don't want to, you know, waste people's time with ads for stuff they can't use. Hey, congratulations going out to the late Grace Hopper.
Yep.
And to Margaret Hamilton, not the Wicked Witch of the West. The poor woman has been named that, but she was the programmer who wrote the code for the Apollo lunar lander.
Largely by hand,
By hand.
There's a great picture of her standing next to the printout of the code that's taller than her.
So
it's amazing.
Awesome. They both won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. This was an amazing ceremony.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen is there. I mean, the people.
Bill Gates was there.
Bill Gates is amazing. Anyway, well done. Admiral Hopper was the
amazing
first
Grace.
Lady of software. She passed away in 92. So it was a posthumous award. She's the one who very famously found a moth in one of the computers that was causing a problem and pasted it in saying, the first actual example of a computer bug. So obviously she had a sense
built
of humor.
The first compiler was pulled back into national service twice because great they lady. Couldn't afford to live without her. She's Amazing Grace was a fantastic woman, and she has a personal motto which she publicized, which was, it is better to ask forgiveness than to ask for permission.
She was the one who came
said
up with that?
Yeah. Oh,
nice.
I use that all the time.
Yeah, so amazing woman.
And credit to Margaret Hamilton. You know, so often we talk about diversity in technology. Here's a woman in 1969 who wrote the code that landed humans on the moon for the first time. Now, thank goodness she's still with us and was there to accept. There she is standing in front of Bill Gates, who's applauding.
And her code is on GitHub. So you can check it out.
We looked at
it. Brilliant.
Yeah, we looked at the Apollo code.
Yeah, people have made pull requests. It's great. It's brilliant.
Fantastic.
You could fork it. Build your own lunar lander.
Well, the Russians have announced they want to land on the moon in 2032.
My Apple Watch is far more powerful than the Apollo.
Yeah.
But, it's fine.
Bill and Melinda Gates honored for their work with the foundation, which is, can you believe this? For a long time, Bill Gates got flack for not giving back. He had so much money, richest man in the world.
Yeah.
And he always said, I'm not going to give away money until I have the time to make sure it's being given away sensibly. He got married to Melinda Gates, who I think convinced him to do it a little earlier. They created the foundation. In the time since the foundation was created, they have given away $36 billion.
And it's highly,
billion.
Yeah. And it's highly likely that within our lifetime, we're going to see the eradication of polio thanks to the work that they've been funding, which there are now only a few countries left which still have polio available, polio in the wild. And this has been a huge push for them. And it could be the very first time since smallpox that we've actually seen something like that actually eradicated and no longer a problem. So
it's amazing.
Yeah.
And just huge work to reduce malaria around the world, too. Just amazing.
You know, the thing about it, too, that in addition to putting a huge amount of money into it, I don't know Melinda very well, but Bill is an extremely smart guy, and he puts a lot of work into this foundation. He puts a lot of his intellect goes into it. So it's not just writing checks. It's actually thinking through how you can use your money, because you can use your money in ways that are actually negative. And there have been – the Gates Foundation has been accused of that. But, you know, as foundations go, I'm pleased that Bill Gates is putting a lot of resources into it.
It has been a remarkable reputational turnaround, because Gates has gone from being one of the ultimate software robber barons and has just remade his entire image by becoming a world philanthropist.
In the great tradition of robber barons,
indeed.
Like Andrew Carnegie, who made all his money in steel and hurt a lot of people, but then built libraries all across the United States.
Alfred Nobel made weapons.
Dynamite.
I mean, and now he has a Peace Prize.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what Steve Jobs would have done if he'd lasted long enough. But
I think Mark Zuckerberg, it'll be very interesting to see. He's already pledged to give away almost all of his fortune.
Well, I was actually at the Zuckerberg health announcement.
Were you?
They've announced that their plan is to make all known diseases either eradicate or make them manageable by the end of the century. and they're pushing huge amounts of money into it. I have to say, when I was at the presentation, it sounded very much like hubris, but Bill Gates was actually there and was
he's working with them on this. Sometimes it's important to dream big dreams.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if you can throw $36 billion...
you can get a lot of progress done.
Might as well. So Zuckerberg and Chan, his wife, have pledged $3 billion to that effort. And they say they're gonna give it almost all away. And I think that's the right way.
Yeah, I think it is the way to do it. You can't take it with you when you die, so, you know.
And how many billions do your kids need, really? I think if each kid has $1 billion, they're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean,
they'll survive.
Bill Gates said
he shouldn't need more than that.
No. Yeah, I mean, Bill Gates said that he was going to leave his children with enough money to do what they wanted, but not to do nothing. So I think that's a nice...
That's like $20. Seriously. You can't, I mean, not... So you mean they have to work? He's going to have... He can't leave them $1 million?
No, I think he's leaving them like $100 million apiece.
They don't have to work. Give them $100,000. They'll blow it on their trip around Europe, and then they'll have to come home.
You realize your son is watching this sweating like
he knows. Just, he's getting,
oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm planning on spending his inheritance long before he comes into it. Absolutely. Folks, we did end on an up note, right?
I just
wanted to say we can do it. There is good news, too, in technology. And I'm so glad to have you guys around to keep me on the straight and narrow. Ian Thompson, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming up here.
Oh, it's always good fun when I do.
Register.co.uk. Anything you want to plug?
Well, we're now out of the gorging season and into the Christmas run-up. So,
Do you fellows eat Marmite during Christmas holidays? Or is there a Marmite?
Every day is Marmite day.
Every day is Marmite day. Just checking. I've been watching The Crown. I've become anglicized now. I just want to. I want to talk in that plumbing.
Have you actually tried Marmite?
I've tried Vegemite.
Ah, that's the Australian ripoff. I'll bring you up some Marmite next time we're up.
Marmite toast for everyone on the next twit. It's made of yeast, right?
Yeah, brewer's yeast.
It's leftovers from making beer.
Yeah.
Really is what it is.
I know.
It's a byproduct
beer
of beer.
And Marmite.
I'll just take the beer.
Is there nothing that beer can't give us? You know?
Much like coal tar is the byproduct of the manufacture of natural gas.
Well, yes.
But I don't spread it on my toast, friends. Larry Magid, connectsafely.org. I'm sorry, .com.
.org,
and then saferkids.com. What do you do there?
Well, connectsafely.org has advice mostly for families, although we now have a senior's guide because it turns out older folks... Yeah, we do. I wrote it for myself, actually. So we have guides for educators, parents, now for senior citizens, but a lot of information like the contract that you mentioned, Leo, to help keep you and your kids safe online, a lot of stuff about privacy and security. And we are doing a podcast now, as you pointed out, at connectsafely.org/podcast, where we interview some of the smartest minds in computer security and privacy.
Nice. I look forward to hearing that. That's great. Nice to have you, Larry. Happy holidays to you.
You too.
And from all the way down the peninsula in beautiful Marin, Jason Snell. I don't want to demean the short distance you travel, but why the hell aren't you here every day?
I just ask. You know, we'll
come
talk.
Anytime. We'll talk.
It's an easy drive. Yeah, people can check me out at sixcolors.com and theincomparable.com.
Anything else you would like to mention?
Relay.fm is where I've got my tech podcasts. And
a lot
I do
of people
my
have, you know, Andy's got a show there. That's a really great source. Mike Hurley does a really good job there at Relay.fm. Damn him.
It's a big internet. I think there's room enough
to
share.
I hate competition. No, actually, Relay.fm is fantastic, and I'm glad that many of my friends have shows there because God knows we can't do any more shows. We're just jam-packed. We are doing our best ofs. We do this every year because we don't want to make everybody work on the holidays. So Christmas Day is a Sunday this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our holiday week will be December 26th through January 2nd or January 1st. So that whole week we'll have best of episodes for all of our shows, including this show. And as always, we're too lazy to figure out what the best parts of the show were. We want you to do all the work. So go to twit.tv/best of. No, I'm just kidding. But if there is a moment you remember, like, Last week with Odakta's rant about MacBooks, that'll have to make it in the best of, right? If you remember the day, the show episode, the time, that would be helpful. But even if you just go, remember that time when Odakta went off and put that in there, that would help too. It'll help us put it together. It's a lot of work. Our editors and producers work very hard in the few weeks before the holidays to give you a great best of. twit.tv/best of to recall your favorite moment from any of our shows. Just a little form. Give us whatever information you know. You don't have to give us all the information. We also, we're going to do our Christmas special. Lisa's reminding me, December 1st, right? And we know who the panel will be yet for that? Denise Howell from This Week in Law. Renee Ritchie from Mac Break Weekly. Steve Gibson from Security Now. What we found a couple of years ago, we did a New Year's Eve panel where we brought together hosts of other shows that don't normally talk together. It was such a great conversation. So we thought we would do that. So that's going to be a special taping on December 1st. Do we know what time it'll be? Is it 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern? That'll be 2000 UTC. But it'll be on the calendar, twit.tv/cal. We're going to figure that all out. Okay. So that's going to be a special holiday episode that will then later air on I guess, Christmas Day on the 26th. Yeah. Day after Christmas. Or no, Christmas Day is the 25th.
Sunday, the 25th, yeah. It's Twit Day.
So it'll be, it's Hat Merry Twit Day. Twitmas, we call it. Thank you all for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Is that 2100 UTC? I believe it is. My math is always a little weak around this time of year because the clocks get all moved around. UTC doesn't change, but
plus
we
eight.
Do.
Minus eight. Oh, minus eight.
Minus eight.
Depends
minus
on your perspective.
Yeah.
So it is 20 minutes to 3 in the morning on in London for anybody who cares.
There you go.
Yep.
If I were in London, I'd be asleep by now.
Well, I have a clock. I have my London clock.
Do you have a London clock?
I do have a London clock. I have a London and New York clock.
We should do that. We should have clocks along the wall. We certainly have a lot of clocks.
You should have a UTC clock, yeah.
That clock should be UTC.
Yeah.
I don't know what time it is. It's wrong.
Yeah, no, I have
if you really want to learn a lot about British swearing, call them up right now because you're calling them 3 a.m. before a Monday morning. Right. You're going to get invective.
Mate, are you bloody crazy? Well,
actually, I bring it to the plus four.
Yeah.
I do a BBC show at 5 in the morning often, wake up to money or something like that. So I don't know who's awake in London at 5 a.m.
That is a well-named show, Wake Up to Money.
Yeah. By the way, Leo, I have been sitting here subscribing to magazines for the last 5 minutes.
Isn't texture great? It's awesome.
It's amazing. There's a lot of magazines that I would never buy because I would feel guilty.
Exactly. Ad Age or Billboard, both of which I should read.
Well, they got PC Mags on here. That's kind of cool. PC World. But, you know, like even magazines that are politically out of touch with what I believe that I probably should read just because it's important to have a broader perspective.
I do that. I read the I know which one you're talking about, the National Review.
National Review, which I never read.
It's a great magazine.
Yeah, I should read it.
I read Reason, which is a libertarian magazine.
Yeah.
I find very
the Smithsonian. I subscribe to the Smithsonian. Will they give me my money back now?
For the cost that you pay for the Smithsonian, you could have texture.
Really?
How about that?
Well, it's amazing. It's fun. And they even have some tabloid kind of stuff, some junk in here.
That's my secret guilty pleasure. I pretend I'm reading the Smithsonian, but actually I'm reading Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, see, normally I just read those at the grocery store before
I check out.
But I never buy them.
I've got to know what's going on with Blake and Gwen. Are they still together? I mean, this was a fascinating story. Exactly. Inquiring minds want to know. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.
This is... Yeah.